Congress's power. And for that, Arlen Specter, a Republican, is my hero of the moment. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
News Network. The Dow Jones dropped more than 400 points in trading today, the second largest plunge this year. We'll have the closing numbers on Wall Street coming up in our business block. Senate Democrats have called for a perjury investigation following Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's congressional testimony earlier this week about whether there was dissent within the president's administration about the warrantless wiretapping program. FBI Director Robert Mueller contradicted Gonzalez when he said today that the program was a topic which was discussed at then-Attorney General John Ashcroft's hospital room, although he was not present in the room at the time. The Democrats also announced the subpoena of top presidential adviser Karl Rove in connection with the firing of 9 prosecutors last year. Justice Department documents reveal that Gonzalez discussed the matter with Rove. In a mostly Shiite area of Baghdad today, a parked car bomb blast killed at least 26 people. More than 75 were wounded. Also today, the U.S. military reported the deaths of 5 American troops in fighting northeast of Baghdad. House Democrats have a new draft of an Iraq funding bill for 2008. It would require a troop withdrawal to begin in 2 months. President Bush would decide when the pullout would be complete. Pat Tillman in Afghanistan in 2004. He is accused of providing misleading information about his death. A top envoy from South Korea is going to Afghanistan to try to save 22 of his country's citizens who are being held hostage by Taliban kidnappers. The South Korean missionaries were taken last week. One of the victims has already been shot to death. There are reportedly 18 women in the group. Republican presidential candidate Senator John McCain's campaign shakeup continues. The latest resignations are his advertising consultants. At the Long Beach airport today, a suspicious item found in a checked bag forced the evacuation of a terminal. The item appears to have been a video game. Michael Vick, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback, accused of being part of a dogfighting ring, pleaded not guilty today at the Richmond, Virginia federal courthouse. As he arrived to be arraigned on those charges today, spectators booed as he walked into the building. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Hi. Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
A strong earthquake struck eastern Indonesia today. The 6.9 magnitude quake caused a brief tsunami alert. There were no immediate reports of damage. A new study finds that obesity can be socially contagious. The researchers report in the New England Journal of Medicine that if your friends and family are fat, it is more likely that you will get fat too. The Commerce Department reports that in June, sales of new single-family homes were down 6.6%. That resulted in a larger inventory of unsold homes than analysts had expected. Also, the median sales price for a new home was $237,900. That is down 1.3% from the previous month. The Commerce Department also reported that in June, orders for big-ticket manufactured goods, led by an increase in airplanes, were up by the largest amount in 3 months. Ford Motor reported a $750 million profit in its second quarter. The automaker says job cuts combined with good sales overseas resulted in the first profitable quarter in 2 years. ExxonMobil earned a net income of more than $10 billion in its second quarter, but that's down 1% from a year ago. Light sweet crude trading at $74.95 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 344 points at 13,441, NASDAQ down 51. There's always more at our website, bulletinnewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
Okay! Don't you!
South America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The week is waning, and the stuff is piled higher and deeper. As we move toward the end of this this hot July, late July, midsummer week, I have a fondness for seeing what the pulse beat is in what passes for journalism in this country. You know what went down today? You've been following stuff all day long. It's the end of the business day, so to speak, here on the East Coast, and you know that FBI Director Robert Mueller appeared in Congress today and directly contradicted the testimony of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez about what was going on surrounding the sickbed visit to then Attorney General John Ashcroft. And you know that, of course, Mueller was not wishy-washy. He said that he talked with Ashcroft right after Gonzalez left the hospital. And he said that then, and Ashcroft told him that the meeting was about the NSA illegal wiretapping program. Now, this was in front of the House Judiciary Committee today. Fredo Gonzalez, of course, testified before the Senate. Mueller also said the illegal wiretapping program, the domestic spying program, gave him a case of the heebie-jeebies, which it should anyone who gives a damn about the constitutional structure of this country. So you've got that, there was no wiggling here. There was no, well, you know, maybe I misunderstood Attorney General Gonzalez. Maybe I didn't, yada, 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 yada. No, there was none of that. He also confirmed for the first time in public that he did, in fact, dispatch, as James Comey testified, he dispatched an FBI security detail to Ashcroft's hospital room to make sure that Comey wasn't removed from the room while Gonzalez was there. Wow. I mean, wow. This is all turning into something out of, this is The Godfather Part 4, isn't it? I mean, you've seen the scene where, you know, the Godfather has to be guarded in his hospital room and all of that. This is that. Because Fredo Gonzalez would do what? Anything. I mean, this is pretty serious news, isn't it? This is lead story stuff. Right? Not at CNN. Not at Chicken Noodle News. Up until a couple of minutes ago, the lead story was Michael Vick pleads not guilty in dogfighting case. Now the lead story is Dow suffers second worst day of 2007. Wonder when the CNN lead story will be FBI director proves attorney general is a liar. Try never. And Katie Couric won't have time for this either. At least not until well after the Viagra commercials and so forth. Michael Vick is the new Paris Hilton. Well, he is. He just is. And I love the headline that, I mean, you know, at least under latest news, CNN has the story about Mueller's testimony today. But listen to how they slug it. FBI head apparently contradicts Gonzalez. Why the weaselly adverb? Who were they afraid of? Is Fredo Gonzalez going to come to them and put a pillowcase over their heads? FBI head apparently contradicts Gonzalez. Go read. I'm not going to sit here and read the story to you. You read perfectly well yourself. And because this comes over the internet, you're in a position to be right there probably at your computer. And you can go read the story. Go read the story. Read it from any wire service you care to peruse. And come back and tell me where in that story is weasel room for hanging an adverb like apparently in front of contradicts Gonzalez. Who is CNN afraid of? Who is CNN trying to cover for? I don't know. But when you see apparently contradicts Gonzalez in a case, a story where the contradiction is obvious, it's like in big neon lights with fireworks going off around it, yes, he contradicted him. Because for all intents and purposes, Fredo Gonzalez called Robert Mueller a liar. Just like he called James Comey a liar. Oh, no, we were discussing another program. That sort of open-mouthed, vacant, smirking thing going on for him. This is another program. I don't get journalism anymore. You know, in a conversation with our good friend Bob in North Dakota last night, I mentioned Jack Anderson. There used to be lots of investigative reporters in this country. There aren't any anymore. Because, among other things, right-wing judges allowed media operations to be sued by the targets of their investigative journalism. And that took the starch right out of investigating. Sure it did. Sure it did. Because the bean counters have a hissy every time they think about a lawyer. Journalism is edgy business. Good journalism is really edgy business. And it is hard work and it is low paid. And so it would seem that in this country a decision has been made that we will not have investigative journalism anymore. Unless, of course, we're investigating whether or not Lindsay Lohan had her ankle bracelet on with her bikini while she was honking on some coke or some such. FBI head apparently contradicts Gonzalez. Bug spray. FBI head proves Gonzalez liar. That's how you write that headline if you're actually interested in doing journalism. But I don't think CNN is interested in journalism. And it's disturbing. By the way, though, also at also out there banging around in the journalismosphere today, lucky for us, the space shuttle is not public transportation. Agnes hasn't seen this one, so her eyes are going to go, what, in a second. Report, drunk astronauts allowed on shuttle.
Astronaut panties.
From the Associated Press, astronauts were allowed to fly after flight surgeons and other astronauts warned that they were so drunk they posed a flight safety risk on at least two occasions. Aviation Week and Space Technology is reporting this on its website. Special panel studying astronaut health, which found heavy use of alcohol before launch that was within the standard 12-hour bottle to throttle rule, is part of that report. And, you know, I've remarked on a number of occasions that I am a child of the space age. By the time I was born, Alan Shepard and John Glenn had already gone into space. By the time I was born, the Apollo program was taking root. Looking back, the most exciting things I remember seeing on the old black and white RCA television was when my mother or my father would call to me to show me a space launch and how it gripped me. And of course you've got the book out there, The Right Stuff, that that chronicles the heroism and you know, ordinary human foibles of those original astronauts. And it seems a long way from there to some dude getting loaded before he flies the space shuttle. Tang, it's what the astronauts drink, apparently not without a little vodka. Astronauts to the moon, at the tender age of 44, I'm still subject to being a little bit depressed when I have my heroic images shattered. The astronaut lady with her depends on driving cross country to go whip the ass of some rival was a blow, and this one is too. So we've got a president in the White House with a couple of DUIs, and now we find out that the astronauts are loaded too. You know, I do remember way back during the Clinton administration when Flush Flemball would have his hissies, and what will we tell the children? Oh my God, he had sex. What will we tell the children? Oh my God. How do we explain it to the children? And Rush Limbaugh said it, and it was echoed on the floor of the Senate and of the House. And I remember thinking, you know, this is a guy, I don't have a problem trying to tell the children this. But I do have a problem. You know, I mean, even at their fairly tender ages, we have started out now talking about drugs, booze, tobacco, sex. And how do I explain to the children that the astronauts are loaded? I mean, I've got a son who's fascinated with astronomy and all things going on in the sky and in space. Well, son, the space shuttle? Yeah, Dad. Dude's wasted. How do you explain that? Why don't we know who that is? Why hasn't that person been busted and run out of the service? I mean, I am the most accepting, do as you wish, the civil libertarian kind of, do your own thing as long as you're not hurting anybody else kind of guy in the world. But the space shuttle? And, you know, by the way, Bill Gerstenmaier, who's the NASA Space Operations Chief, confirmed that there's not been a disciplinary action or anything regarding this type of activity. I mean, I understand that George Bush, you know, didn't have to do any time over his DUIs. You know, he's a Bush. Bushes aren't subject to the laws of this nation. They're better than us. They're above us. They are our royalty. I understand. I hate it, but I understand. But an astronaut getting on the shuttle wasted? And there's been no disciplinary action, not even a, hey, buddy, you know, what do you say you don't get loaded before you get on the shuttle? Not even that! And this is a direct outgrowth, I think, because, again, back in the Clinton administration, we were reminded that the nation takes its cues from its chief executive. Just like, just like they said, you know, because Bill Clinton got a Hummer from Monica, all of our children were just going to be engaged in rampant orgies of oral sex, and it's obviously true. I mean, you can't swing a dead cat now without seeing some kids at that. No, I'm kidding. But really, isn't it a reflection of sort of national character when you've got a dry drunk in the White House that you wind up with a drunk on the stick of the space shuttle? Wow. Yeah, maybe he wasn't on the stick. Maybe he wasn't the pilot. Maybe he wasn't the commander. Maybe he was just one of those people sitting back there strapped into the couch and being loaded for liftoff just makes things a little bit easier. God almighty. Drunk astronauts. It's all turning into a bad movie, isn't it? So that's a couple of those are a couple of the places that we begin this evening. There's a jillion stories in the Naked Nation, and we'll find time to talk about a lot of them, I hope, this evening. And of course, I hope you'll be part of that conversation. You know the phone number, 304-658-5453, 304-658-5453, or 877-443-2366. Email to bob@headonradio.com. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, proudly sober. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat it. Head on RadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I, thank you.
All right, then, we're back, 27 minutes after the hour. How about that, Agnes? Getting the beer goggles on and staring at the moon and the stars.
I'd like to.
Of course, I got an email in from our good friend Cindy out in Washington. And she points out that the president vets the astronaut list. And nobody flies without a presidential okay. He makes or breaks the career. And then she asks, do you think this drunk would choose a teetotaler? Oof. That's a disturbing thought. Well, that's going to fly a space shuttle. God, America's is under the control of Foster Brooks. Phew. Let's go to the phones. I haven't heard from our good friend Albert in Wisconsin a good long while. How you doing?
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm holding up, I guess.
Yes. Well, you gotta try to stay a little cool in this weather. So do you think it's possible? Is it really happening? I know that you and I and everyone else that has a brain and some eyes has been able to see the farce of this administration since the very beginning. But now that we're seeing, I don't want to say it because I don't want to, jinx it.
Yeah, I know. It's like talking about a no-hitter. Nobody talks to the pitcher.
That's kind of what it's like. And, are these Democrats going to put some rubber on my cynicism? Are they going to insulate this? Are they going to, go through with this? Are we going to see it happen?
The thing that keeps working in my head, Albert, is a lot of people worked really hard to take down Al Capone for the really rotten, sleazy stuff that Al Capone did, the killings and the carrying and the gangland stuff. And he wound up going down for tax evasion.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's something similar here. We have sat and we have cried out like voices in the wilderness that starting a war based on lies is an impeachable offense, that torture is an impeachable offense, that virtually everything that George Bush has set about doing is an impeachable offense, and Dick Cheney. Could it be that he'll go down eventually over trying to strong-arm a man who's whacked out of his mind on a sick bed, having gone through surgery? Could that be the thing that finally takes him down?
You know, I hate to say it, but, even look at with Nixon. I mean, Watergate wasn't the worst of what he did.
No.
So, and at the same time, I think that was a good old friend, Keith Olbermann, sat there and pointed out Bush's approval ratings down with, what are they, 65% disapprove of him. So, and Nixon only hit 66%, Bush has hit 65% three times. So, I mean, it's almost, Bob, you have principles, I have principles, and I don't want to. I don't accept, John Ashcroft, he strong-armed John Ashcroft when John Ashcroft was sick or what have you. For what that is, I'll take that, but that to me is only one brick in the wall that we really need to dismantle here. We're looking at a little tiny thing like that. I mean, it's like, I understand that whole Al Capone thing, but we really need to...
I'm trying for all I'm worth, Albert, to hang on to some kind of optimism here.
I know, but at the same time, we need to push for, this war against, the crimes for the war against the war of aggression and the lies told for it. We need to push for this stuff, or it's going to set a precedent that we're going to see, just like when they did with even Reagan and the Iran-Contra affair. That's why we're seeing what we see now, and that's why with these politicians, it sets a precedent for them. And like, I can make an executive order saying, I can take, Bob Kincaid's property because he's, going against my Iraq war policies, and he's subjugating the
country. I know what you're talking about. I agree completely, Albert. And this is what I don't know how we get it through to the Republicans in the House and the Senate, but I think the question should be asked them directly. When you are considering these matters as pertaining to a member of the Bush administration, please ask yourself how you will feel if a Democrat does it. And if you want to get real blunt about it, how will you react if Hillary does it? And if that, and if you would do it to Hillary, do it to George. You got to. Because the Constitution doesn't have the word Republican or Democrat in it. And I guess, I'm not suggesting that Hillary will go out and do all this stuff, but the fact of the matter is, George Bush's power grab is a power grab that will be used as precedent for whomever is the next president, and the president after that, and the president after that, ad infinitum, and the power will only grow. Power never decreases itself unless it is proactively diminished.
By us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's I guess that's my only real fear on this whole issue is, we all know that, the lame duckness, and, he needs to be tried, and that's, that goes without saying. I mean, you know where I stand on where he needs to go.
Yeah, The Hague.
But exactly, or even let's do it here, because, the Republicans would get all bent. But this is something that has to be done for our Constitution. This has to be done for our civil liberties. This has to be done for so many reasons. We don't have time to list all of them in a couple of hours. So this is something that we really, really need to... Yeah, I look at it like, Alberto Gonzalez is doomed. And Bush's support of him should be... I mean, who do you think Alberto Gonzalez is taking his orders from?
Well, precisely, and that's that whole exchange with Charles Schumer from a couple of days ago. Who sent you? I went on behalf of the president. Who sent you? I went on behalf of the president. Who sent you? I went on behalf of the president. Because what he was avoiding saying was one of two answers: George Bush sent me, or Dick Cheney sent me, because that is the smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
When that question is finally answered, the Fredo will not roll until he understands that he's going to be wearing orange and be somebody's girlfriend in prison. then he'll roll.
Yeah, well, these ideologues that they put up there, I mean, they have no shame. They have, you know, they talk about principle. They have no principles. And this is actually something that's just been blowing my mind. Negroponte is like where they're getting the evidence for, you know, this whole deal with Gonzalez, right? Isn't that where they're getting it from, Negroponte?
Really?
Yeah, Negroponte wrote a letter, which is like one of the key points in this, you know, this now this they're going to come up with this investigation against Gonzalez, where Negroponte wrote a letter stating what Gonzalez was doing with Ashcroft, I believe. If not, it was another aspect of that.
So far the reference publicly has been to the testimony of James Comey, and now today, you know, Robert Mueller comes in and says, "Yeah, I did that. I put an FBI security detail in there and said, don't let him run Mr. Comey out while Gonzalez is there."
Hmm.
So, you know,
I'm almost positive it was a letter to do with what Negroponte said. So let me just check this out real quick. I mean, we're sitting here looking at if Negroponte's going against you, though. And
well, if wherever Negroponte goes, death squads follow.
I know. And then he's a wet works kind of guy, along with what's that other Poindexter? He's another one. And these are all these people that we see keep coming back up and keep coming back up and keep coming back up. And, you know, I guess maybe they know the CYA game a little better than maybe Gonzalez does, who doesn't, you know, I don't understand what he thinks he's doing.
Gonzalez doesn't have the mental wherewithal to be anything but a toad. Okay, that's just what he is. And it goes all the way back to Texas when he was on the, you know, he's always been a tool of the Bush family. He has always always hitched his career to their star. You know, going back to the business about fudging up George Bush's jury duty to cover up his DUIs before he ran for president, because that would have been destructive at that phase of the family plan. You know, that's all Gonzalez is. He is purely a political animal. He's a political creature. He is a creation of Karl Rove, and he doesn't know how to act independently, and he doesn't, and he will not understand, and that's why I said Schumer should have hauled a diehard battery and some jumper cables out during the questioning the other day, just to let him know that this, you know, Fredo, buddy, this is about you. There's a reason George nicknamed you Fredo, Mr. Gonzalez. Have you seen the movie? And, you know, at some point, the light will come on for it. It hasn't yet.
Yeah.
He's been assured by Fred Fielding. He's been assured by Rove. He's been assured by everybody. Oh, they can't get to you. They can't get to you. They don't have any power. We'll assert his executive privilege or something. Yeah, we'll protect you. They're not going to protect him. If it comes to him versus George Bush's rear end, Fredo will flap in the breeze.
Well, he does. He needs to. But Bush also has to come down, and he needs to answer. I mean, the accountability that we need to, you know, force these people to swallow isn't just upon, you know, I mean, this is why I don't want to just turn it into, oh, it's Gonzalez, it's Gonzalez, it's Gonzalez. It's not Gonzalez. It's Bush, it's Cheney, you know, and Karl Rove is.
But to the same extent, in order to get Nixon, didn't we have to get Haldeman? Didn't we have to get Ehrlichman? Didn't we have to get John Mitchell, the Attorney General of the United States? Didn't we have to get Spiro Agnew before the lights went on?
Indeed, and that's what I'm saying. Like, we can't just focus on one. I mean, I'm just saying, we can't just sit here and go, oh, it's the Gonzalez, because you know how the right wing is going to spin it. They're going to sit there and go, oh, yep, bad apple, one bad apple, it doesn't, you know, mean anything, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're all the same things that they always say, the things that they always, oh, it's not Bush, how could dare you say that against the president, why do you hate America? I mean,
you knew that so well.
That's what they say, and they just, you know, they spit it out and spit it out and spit it out. And, I mean, there was a guy talking about, because, as you know, my senator is Russ Feingold, and he's coming up with the censor thing here pretty shortly. I don't know if he even put it in yet. But, as you know, we're on the second and third shifts here in this house. So when I go to bed, I turn on the radio sometimes if my wife's working, and I sit there and I'll listen to the radio, and there's this guy who came on, and he said, every right right-wing fantasy talking point that you could ever imagine against Russ Feingold, for the war in Iraq, for Bush, for, I mean, the things that this guy was saying, I mean, like, we found weapons of mass destruction. I mean, these people believe this. They believe that finding 500 munitions that are buried under the sand at the old Iran-Iraq, you know, war fronts, right?
We got them. They're there.
Oh, yep. See, we did it. You know, these weapons that he's like, oh, Hans Blix found it before we went in. No, Hans Blix found some empty containers put in the back of some, you know, warehouse that Saddam couldn't even go to. You know, so, like, the things that these people will use, and they'll use anything. I mean, they will take the...
But is anybody listening to them anymore?
You know,
The numbers for right-wing talk are tanking across the country. The Russia's losing audience, not building it. The same thing applies with all the other yammer heads. O'Reilly's demographic is 80 years old.
O'Reilly.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm getting at here, I, like I said, I'm hanging on to every shred of optimism that I can find, and I'm beginning to wonder if you know, and this is what we have to hope. I mean, this is the only tolerable scenario, is that if John Conyers, for instance, whom we talked about at some length a couple of nights ago, if John Conyers had come out and said, if he just came out six guns a-blazing, well, they would mount a vigorous defense to that. But if he comes out and he does the soft shoe and he sort of aw shucks his way through it all, and, you know, I don't know what we're going to find. You know, we're just going to have a little hearing. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll talk. We'll give everybody a chance to ask their questions.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is that by doing that, that the shiv goes between the Bush administration's ribs before they know it's broken the skin.
Now you're starting to sound like what was that Christian Coalition guy?
Oh, Ralph Reed.
Now you're starting to sound like Ralph Reed.
Don't do that to me. We're too good friends.
Hey, you gave me I'm proud to be an American. I got to give you a little.
yeah, you're still getting me back for that. don't make Agnes cue that up again.
No, please. Agnes wouldn't do that to me. She promised.
Okay.
But, yeah, we're sitting here, and I really do. I do hope that there's enough time before. Well, I mean, look at where the financial markets are going. I mean, you know, they've been talking. I've told you this before, and I've said this before. Where, you know, I mean, I used to work on Wall Street, so I'm a little bit of aware of how it does kind of work. And, you know, people who like I do have a couple of token right wing friends here. And, you know, it's nice to sit there and listen to them try to say these social Darwinistic, you know, viewpoints. And I just laugh because one day, you know, the roles will reverse on them and they'll actually have to, they'll actually wind up, you know, sitting there saying, well, you were right. And maybe that's why I keep them as friends. But, you know, they talk about the, you know, the Dow's at 13,000. Oh my God, it's so great, you know, but they don't ever look at, you know, the dollars at 70 cents of what it was when the Dow was at 10,000.
We are almost at a point, by the way, and this is in line with what you're talking about, Albert, we are almost at a point where the American dollar is on a par with the Canadian dollar. And that's, you know, that's no slur to the Canadians or anything, but that's never happened.
No, it didn't. And I'll be honest with you, back when Bush first got elected in 2001, 2002, after everyone had the little embassy flags on their car and stuff like that, I got pretty fed up with this country, and I wanted to look to emigrate to somewhere else. And I was looking at Canada. And just to kind of give you an example, I could find a five-bedroom house in British Columbia with, you know, 10 acres. Pretty decent. You probably got to do a little bit of fixing up job, but it was at 65,000 Canadian. And this was back when the dollar was very strong, so we're almost looking at, you know, this house was like $35,000, and you can't buy a house like that in this country, at least anywhere I know.
No, not that it's not a little cute little burner downer.
Yeah, like what I have currently. So it's kind of one of those things where, you know, and I was looking at that, and, you know, we had some money saved up, and we never bit the bullet and never went. And after Bush got elected, because I have paid attention to, you know, I try to pay attention to as many things as I can in a day, but after Bush got elected this last time, well, whatever you want to call it, in 2004, you probably heard a little bit of something. There were so many Americans that were looking to get out of America at that time, and they were looking to go to Canada. Well, I'll tell you right now, Bob, a trailer in British Columbia, a trailer in a trailer park is $85,000. So that's $85,000 Canadian, which now it's almost on par, so you're looking at $83,000. It's a disgusting, huge jump, and it's shown how far we've fallen. You know, look, we don't manufacture anything anymore. We, you know, they try to say, oh, well, you know, you American workers, you want too many benefits, you want too much of this, you want too much of that. You know, we let the unions go sit there, and, you know, the unions get weaker and weaker and weaker because they buy whose stock? Do they buy, you know, stock that, you know, would be beneficial to everybody and themselves? No, they go and buy ExxonMobil. And then they say, oh, well, you know, we can't really raise fuel efficiency. You know, and what happens is everyone's interests become so entangled and so. I mean, every time it's like a big cobweb of crap, where everyone's interests supersedes everyone's better, you know, our should be goals. I mean, when you're sitting here looking at Exxon, you know, they finally even Bill O'Reilly is giving them crap. I mean, so now if you got Bill O'Reilly, okay, ugh, if you got him going after you for price gouging. I mean, come on now. We're sitting here looking at these people. They're not producing the. They're shutting down. Oh, we got a little leak. Oh, we got to shut down this refinery. Oh, we got this, or we got to shut down another refinery. I mean, Bob, we're sitting here right now looking at gas in my area at, you know, in the premium is $3.43. The regular's $3.15. Okay, now how much longer? I mean, and as our economy keeps tanking and tanking and tanking and tanking, okay, and as people like my in-laws, they're right wingers in my in-laws, they're evangelical right wingers.
Yeah.
Their house has been on the market for going on a year now, and they're starting to kind of like, you know, I'll sit there and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, you hear it's coming, and they'll give me a little bit of a, you know, they don't even like it that if you mention a zombie or something, they get all, you mentioned zombies, those aren't real. But anyway,
yeah. They turn blue at the side of a Ouija board.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's it's. I mean, it's just a
little.
The
little propeller beanie wearing people.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty exactly. You know, but they sit there and you know, now we're sitting there. They're looking at their house and they're trying to get another house in this area where they're trying to get out of the cities. You know, and this they kind of see a little bit of what I've been saying. I mean, you know. I mean, their first impressions of me were right after 9/11, which was probably not the best time to talk to somebody like me if you're somebody like that. But, you know, they're starting to really wake up to this fact of, you know, yeah, we have a job now because, you know, he works at Matthews Bow, and, you know, they make decent bows and they sell them worldwide. But, you know, that's what we're making here, bows and arrows and, I mean, things that, you know, are like luxury items. I mean, things
yeah.
that the Sultan of Brunei will buy for his, you know.
No, I know. There's a family-owned and operated shoe and boot company somewhere up there in Wisconsin. Who's? I'd love to have a pair, but you know, they're luxury items. They are. You can't just buy them.
No, and that's, you know, and that's what we're looking at here, where all the things that we make that are worth having are unattainable or unsustainable, and they're, you know, I mean, or there are these little one shoot type things where you buy a bow, and you know, as long as you take care of it, you probably never need another bow in your life. So, but when we sit here and look at, you know, we send our recycling to China, okay? Send our recycling, Bob.
We sent the steel debris of the World Trade Center to China, for the love of God.
I know, without even investigating it.
Yeah, I know.
That. You know, but, I mean, yeah, we sent it to China and to India, and we send all our tech jobs. Anybody who's ever had a problem with the computer, who are they going to call? They're going to call their computer helpline, and who are they going to talk to? They're going to talk to a guy named Steve with an Indian accent.
That's one of my favorite parts.
You know, it's like, hi, my name is Steve. I'm going to help you very much. Yeah, it's like, what? And that's the thing, you know, back in the day.
Who won the World Series in 1938? Oh, I'm not knowing.
Oh, and I always ask them. I just ask them just to make a point of it. You know, like, where are you? Oh, and they have to tell you. Like, they don't lie. And they'll be in the Philippines. And they used to, when I used to call them up just to ask them where they were, period, because I wanted to know back in the, you know, late 90s. And I'd say, where are you? And they'd say, oh, I'm in Texas, or oh, I'm in Connecticut, or oh, I'm in, you know, Tennessee or something. Okay? That's a little different now. All of a sudden, we're sitting here looking
at it. Well, you know, you're pointing at something there, Albert, that is very interesting, and that is that for the middle and the lower classes, we are not allowed to. The situation has been gamed to the point where we're not allowed to buy American merchandise anymore.
No,
literally not allowed. The free market, the free market miracle that you know that is Bush-merica, does not permit Americans to support American workers because our betters, our superiors, our royalty doesn't want an empowered middle class because that's dangerous to them.
No, exactly.
The dumber we are, and the more terrified we are, the easier we are to lead. Isn't that true?
Indeed. It's exactly true. I mean, George Carlin, did you hear his latest? He totally says this. He's like, there's a reason our education system sucks. There's a reason that this stuff is that way, and it will always be that way, is because the people that own this country want it that way. Okay? And that's kind of what it's like.
Why do you think we're going to have Chinese automobiles on the market for $8,000 inside of 3 years? There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Because if you can bust the American... bear in mind, the executives of GM and the executives of Ford and Chrysler are not going to... They're not going to be in a breadline somewhere. They've already taken care of themselves. They've got golden parachutes that have parachutes, okay? But
well,
it is the...
Yes, man.
Yeah, it's the middle class that's going to get trashed.
Indeed. Well, just like we were talking on this on the chat... we're sitting here looking at the potential. I mean, it's there. If anybody who pays attention to history and if you actually pay attention to this stuff, it is mind-numbing to a degree, and I can understand why a lot of people don't. But if you do pay attention, we're set up for another collapse. I mean, if we have another stock market collapse, and if that happens, I know it can't happen again. Well, then if you think it can't happen again, you didn't listen to what they were saying before the last one happened. Oh, it can never happen. Oh, it never happened. And, it's one of these things in 1929, but right up to the very moment they didn't, and the next thing ba-boom, and it hits them. And the next thing businesses are shut down, everybody's, going and looking for work, there's soup lines, there's everything else like that. And what took us out of that? What took us out of that Great Depression?
Would be World War II.
World War II, in part, and also, the framework that Roosevelt set up, with all the work and building all the...
WPA, CCC, sure.
Exactly. Now, we're sitting here looking at that. Well, all that stuff's gone. We don't even have any of that. Now, we're at this point, if anybody even tried to bring something up like that again, we're communists, we're socialists, we can't even get, socialized medicine over here. And as these insurance companies are cannibals, I mean, these people are cannibals. They're literally cannibals, Bob. They eat the sick and poor and dying people.
Yes.
Right? They make it, they put their lobbyists out there. Now you can't even, if you, whatever, God forbid, if you sit there and you get hurt, who knows what happens to you, and all of a sudden you got all these medical bills and all this other stuff, your insurance drops you, and you have to declare bankruptcy. You can't declare bankruptcy on a medical problem. You can't even write off credit cards anymore. You can't do nothing. So now we're set up to this point. I'm telling you, we're set up, and I fear this, that we're set up to the point that if and when we collapse, okay, we are totally up a river with no paddles and holes in the boat. Okay, we're screwed. And this is why, Alberto Gonzalez, we need to do this, and we need to hurry up with this. I understand, Patrick Leahy wants to be a gentleman and give him another week. No, we don't have these weeks because, I hate to be a Chicken Little, but the doom could hit us immediately, overnight.
Yeah.
It could hit us immediately. And if they sit there and they want to invade Iran and they want to put more war and more war and more war, well, this is a sad thing about this whole deal. And we're talking about, how World War II got us out of the Great Depression. Well, Bob, we're not even building our military hardware anymore.
That's the point that you were bringing me that I was going to go to next, Albert. And that is, when World War II came, we had an industrial infrastructure. We had tool and die. We had foundries and steel mills and furnaces and assembly lines. Those are all gone. Now, what we had to do in World War II was to convert them from civilian to military usage. We're in a position now where if we actually got, busy in a shooting war, we don't have the means to produce the stuff. I mean, this thing in Iraq, for all intents and purposes, for as evil as it was, anybody with a half a brain who was really committed to doing this thing could have done it. Okay? Yeah. But this little tin pot pissant war in Iraq, we can't even provide up armored Humvees. We we're just now getting ready to ramp, getting to the point where we're ramping up production on these vehicles that are IED resistant. And it's based on a South African design, not our design.
No. And that's another thing. I mean, let's talk about these neocon swine for a second. Who are they now? They're in so much trouble, and they're in such denial about it. Who are they talking to help them in Iraq now? Iran.
I know.
They're talking to Iran. I thought Iran was the big evil.
At the same time that they're ramping up a war against Iran.
Exactly. What is that? What is that, Bob? The dead ends don't compute. The dead ends don't compute. I understand with, you know, like, in another aspect of it, we're sitting here looking at, you know, how, we talk about the religious aspect for a second. I mean, they're over here with, you know, they're over here with this Bible and revelations and so on and so forth. Now, I've seen this for a little while, but doesn't it seem to you or anybody else that what they're doing is using revelations as like a handbook? That they're trying to set up such strife in the Middle East that eventually one day when Armageddon comes, everyone will just be for it because this is the will of God. And we'll sit there and, you know, they can be friends and they do that. I mean, Iran wouldn't be Iran the way it is today if it wasn't for what we did.
It's our creature.
Exactly. And, you know, how many Americans can admit to that? You know, we need that. We need people to be intellectually honest and say, listen, you know, I know you don't want to be labeled intellectual liberal, but you have to admit to certain things. You know, don't talk to me about personal responsibility. And then, on the other hand, then sit there and, you know, like my token friend would say, oh, America's never done anything wrong. Like, and say that and believe it. I mean, they believe this, Bob. This is the backwash. That's who these people are. And I don't understand why they have so much influence other than that the people that control them have a lot of money. And because that's really all I can, that's all I can conceptualize, is that the people that they...
Well, they're worshippers of money. They're not worshipper of Yeshua or of the Old Testament prophets or anything. No, they worship money and they worship power. You know, John Dean's book, Conservatives Without Conscience, laid out the psychological profile of these people, these Bush voters, these so-called conservatives. They are authoritarian followers.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I mean, and I was going to say this a little earlier, I mean, there are, you know, honest to God, real conservatives that, like John Dean, and there's another gentleman that was on with Moyers talking about impeachment, and, you know, like, these people are real conservatives talking about real issues. Like, they don't just sit there and say, oh, well, I'm a conservative, so anything that a liberal says, I don't believe. And that's another problem that we, as being liberals, have to get past as well. We can't sit there and just listen to us. We have to listen to them. And that's maybe another reason why I do have these guys that I don't completely ostracize, because it's like I kind of want to know what they're at, and I like to throw my seeds, and I plant my seeds, and I'm telling you, Bob, when it all hits the fan, there'll be plenty of fertilizer around to spring up these...
Oh, yeah, seeds. Well, and, I mean, as far back as 2003, I said that a day will come when you will not be able to find someone who will admit to having voted for George Bush, and the mention of George Bush's name will cause little children to cry and grown-ups to spit on the ground.
Hold on. I do it now, but...
gotcha. All of this is worthy of our consideration, and I like what you say about... trying to, you know, keeping an ear on what the other side is saying, and I do some of that, and I read some, and when I'm in the car, you know, I'll tune in and see what, you know, what the OxyContin's doing to Russia's brain today. I do all that, and in fact, we had a libertarian we've had a couple of conservatives wander into the chat room a couple of times, and to be honest with you, and I know the folks in the chat room are listening to me, so I hope this is taken in the best of spirits. When these people wander in, you don't immediately scream troll and put them on ignore.
No, I was there for one of them to come in, and he actually held some sort of rational conversation.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, yeah, I mean, but that's one thing. I mean, you're talking about a conservative that's listening to the head-on. which just shows that you guys are getting noticed. And what
well, you know, and that's the other thing, quite frankly. And this is, you know, this isn't entirely about my ego, but the day that the right wing websites and the right wing hardcores start screaming about what we're doing, that's the day we know that we've arrived.
Mm.
You know, that's the day when we become a blip on the national radar screen.
Indeed.
Because I can't be more sincere, Albert. I don't live just to scream at conservatives. I've said in the past that I don't want them on the program, that kind of thing, and to a certain extent, yeah, I don't. But I want to engage in dialogue. I want to find out what these weirdos are thinking, as long as they are talking about what's coming out of their own brains. The conversation that I've had with you for the past half hour or so has been your own thoughts. The problem that you run into when you start talking to these wingers is that they repeat talking points, and it's like a character flaw, Albert, because yeah, they're doing this because of the kind of people they are. They are authoritarian followers. They are not expected to have their own ideas. That's why the Rush Limbaugh program, the Hannity, Wiener, whatever, are these long screeds of telling people how to think, telling people what to think, you know, what it takes for them to be a good American. You know, that's not what happens here. This is, you know, this and liberal talk in general, whether it's me, our good friend Mike Malloy, Stephanie Miller, any of the above. Nobody's given anybody any marching orders, and we're begging, you know, and that really is the polar opposite of right wing talk, because we're out here, Albert, you're out there, and we're begging people to think for themselves.
Amen. That's what it is. It's no marching orders. It's, you know what the right thing is to do. Do it. You know you can't stand for hypocrisy and lies, or, you know, if you can today, how much longer can you? And that's kind of what it is. And that's why I applaud you. Honestly, anybody who's listening who's a right winger and thinks, they only hate George Bush because he's a Republican, and you know how it is, the baby mentality. You know, if they would actually sit there and pay attention, we are as hard, and I believe we should be even harder on our side of the political spectrum to maintain some sort of progression when we're looking at this stuff. When we're sitting here looking at, you know, Gonzalez and all this, I mean, they wouldn't be doing a damn thing if we weren't out here saying, you need to impeach, you need to do this, you need to do that. If Cindy Sheehan didn't come out and say, I'm running against Pelosi because she put impeachment off the table, and impeachment is the table. We need to actually, that's the ground, that's the baseline. That is our constitutional duty to uphold when we sit here and look at this.
Impeachment is a sword of Damocles that should hang over every president's head.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not an extraordinary remedy.
No.
When you look at how it's framed up in the Constitution, Albert, it doesn't say if the president commits and a long laundry list of crimes.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that if he becomes extraordinarily bad. It says if he commits high crimes and misdemeanors. For the love of God, DUI is a misdemeanor, okay? And high crimes and misdemeanors does not have a different meaning in the Constitution from what it has with the guy on the street.
Yep.
If George Bush commits a misdemeanor, he can be removed, or any president. That's what the framers meant. No, bear with me for a second. When the framers put together the Constitution, Albert, there was no such thing as the U.S. Code. Okay, the Congress had not defined, because Congress had not been created. Mm-hmm. Congress had not defined any crimes. So they couldn't put a laundry list in that says, well, if he commits breaking and entering, or if he, is torturing raccoons on Pennsylvania Avenue, or no, it says high crimes and misdemeanors, because that encompasses, for all intents and purposes, in 1787, that encompasses every form of malfeasance that a person could commit, high crimes and misdemeanors.
Exactly. You know how Bush would try to do it, and that's how they try to say it. I mean, Cheney's not even part of the executive.
Right, but the fact of the matter is, what that is a statement that the President of the United States shall at all times be utterly law-abiding.
Yes,
and that's it's an indication of how upside down, sideways, and bass ackwards the power structure has become in this country. That you've got, from Richard Nixon forward. You know, in the interview that Richard Nixon gave to David Frost, he said, "Well, if the president does it, it can't be illegal." My God, what? There's not enough acid in the universe to make my brain work like that.
No. No.
You know, it doesn't. Becoming president is not a pardon in its own right to do whatever evil one deems to be politically expedient to do. One must, as president, at all times be law abiding. When one is president, one is Caesar's wife, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to stop using. That's why we got to take back our words too. You know, and that's what I think. I think a lot of times people will look at I'm talking people in general, and the common man on the street, you know, which obviously, most common people you talk to in the street, they all hold very high ideals about what this country represents and what it should be and how it should work. But the whole thing is then they'll hear things like impeachment, and they'll think, and they'll get all, they don't understand that, that, I believe, the impeachment part, the us keeping, us working hard at maintaining integrity and honesty and all the things that are important, that is the blood, I think, in today's world. Like, we shouldn't have, was it Thomas Jefferson, the blood of the Tree of Liberty needs to be fed with blood every couple of years. That's what it has to be. It has to be this. That is the blood in my eyes. It's the figurative blood of sitting there, and when somebody like George Bush does the things like George Bush has done. I mean, we can't even. There is no precedent. This guy's way worse than Nixon. He makes Nixon look like a piker. Okay, we're sitting here looking at a president that does things because he's the dictator. He wants to be the dictator.
Exactly. And Albert, I caught some flack back when Gerald Ford finally shuffled off this mortal coil and went to his long home and to his reward. Because I refused to be nice about Gerald Ford, because the pardon of Richard Nixon was a substantial step on a downhill slide of the basically creating the outlaw nation that is currently the U.S. When you take away the threat of criminal prosecution, because what Gerald Ford did was utterly unconstitutional and utterly illegal. He pardoned a man who had not been charged with a crime,
and he wasn't even elected.
Right. So what happens there is that every time we let a president slide, okay, and for as stupid as it was, you can say that in a way the impeachment of Bill Clinton was in some universe important, because every time you let a president slide over anything, you make it more likely that the next president will do something more monstrous. I think maybe three nights in a row on this show now, I've pointed out, we all looked at Nixon and we said, Jesus God, he is awful. Man, we could never have a president worse than Richard Nixon. And along comes Gerald Ford and just turns the idea of the pardon power of the president on its ear. Nixon thereby gets away with every rotten, lousy, stinking thing that he did, and that sets up the advent of Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
And Ronald Reagan comes in, and they run a scam, and a bunko operation that is by far, that frankly made Watergate look like nothing. And so you get Katherine Graham at the Washington Post making a pronouncement saying, well, the people of the United States can't withstand a constitutional crisis of this magnitude, so we can't impeach Ronald Reagan.
All right.
And so we don't impeach Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan, that evil old fool, gets away with it. And when he gets away with it, he makes it possible for George Bush to come along and get away with even more. And if we let George Bush get away, and Dick Cheney, with what they have gotten away with, Albert, then the next person who comes along, be it Hillary or Rudy or whom the hell ever, is going to have power in their hands that we will not be able to check. And we will be, and we will at that point be in an imperial status where our nation's well-being is entirely predicated on the willingness of the chief executive to be a decent human being.
Yeah, and that's not our destiny. And that's not where we need to be. We need, that's why we need impeachment immediately. I mean, I know it's not going to happen immediately, but we need it before he's gone. I mean, if he's impeached in his last week, I mean, and it's completed in his last week, my whole hope for the future and it will have changed, because that'll change the entire paradigm of where we're actually, of where we're entering into. I mean, look at this in terms of, I mean, historical, I know you do. I mean, if you look at this in terms of historical precedent, for us to sit here and allow this this guy to continue to do what he's been doing, I mean, I don't even understand under what authority he has any longer.
Well, it's made up authority. It's entirely bogus. It's hoodoo. Agnes is telling me we've at some point in time got to go to the news, so I guess we'll right. do that. I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah,
Albert.
Bob, you know I love you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Stay cool. Mighty hot and dry up there in Wisconsin where Albert is. We'll do some news, and we'll come back to more of your phone calls. 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. Couple of lines open. We'll be right back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Make your choices. WordBoulevards.com.
Come visit us at sanfrancisco.com, sanjose.com, carmel.com, washingtondc.com, paloalto.com, seattle.com, oakland.com, sanantonio.com, denver.com, and many more. WeAreBoulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at boulevards.com. More than 150,000 chickens are being slaughtered in the state capital of India's Manipur province. Bird flu was discovered to have caused the death of more than 100 birds at a poultry farm there this week. The Tour de France ousted two teams after members tested positive for drugs. Late yesterday, the race leader, Michael Rasmussen, was fired by his sponsor for lying about the reasons he missed taking his drug tests. New York City cab drivers announced plans to strike over the city's decision to put global positioning systems in every taxi. Cabbies say they can't afford the steep installation costs, and they fear the Big Brother technology violates their privacy rights. The Commerce Department reports that in June, sales of new single-family homes were down 6.6%. Also, the median sales price for a new home is down 1.3% from the previous month. Analysts blame today's stock market slide on concerns over the housing market after the Commerce Department issued that disappointing home sales report. Corporate borrowing difficulties were also blamed. Light sweet crude is trading at $74.71.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Almost 16 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob, and your second hour will be approximately 45 minutes long, because I love a good conversation. And you, too, are welcome to jump in for such conversation. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. Or on your nickel, if you've got one of those unlimited long-distance plans, 304-658-5453, and it makes our lives a little bit simpler from the bill-paying standpoint here. I'm tickled to death to have Sarge on the line. I haven't heard from him in a long, long time. Sarge, it's so good to hear from you. You doing all right, buddy?
I am doing great. If I was doing any better, I'd be embarrassed about it.
Well, that's good then.
Yeah, I thought I'd give you a call and tell you I appreciated you coming on the show that day. You were a great guest, and we're going to do it again.
I'd love to. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I tell you what, I've had a lot of comments, and people really enjoyed it, and they really wanted to hear more about mountaintop removal, and I think we need to.
Oh, I absolutely. You know, I don't know if you heard, but in the last week or so, it's gotten particularly nasty. One of the mountaintop removal companies has more or less bulldozed a 200-year-old cemetery, and it's pretty sickening, you know.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, there's five words that I like to use: belligerent, greed, and perpetual hate, and that's the Republican theme, I think.
I think you're right.
They all, it doesn't matter who they have to step on, just step on them, and it's all for us and to hell with everybody else. So
there's a lot of truth in that.
I tell you, I was just got word from Mississippi last night that I thought would be some little interesting news that you're not going to hear on the newscast. There's a bridge, a vital bridge, that connects Ocean Springs and Biloxi, Mississippi. They had a drug bust. All the construction workers virtually were arrested for drug use. All of them were aliens. Whether they were legal or illegal, I don't know. But they were busted. The contractor was finally fired. And so
I'm guessing this is non-union labor.
Oh, definitely. You know it is. And the contractor has now lost the contract, and so now the people are going to have to sit for probably a year before any more work is done on that very important bridge. And it just shows the stupidity of this group in power, because if they had contracted this to local contractors who knew how to rebuild these bridges, who have been there before, would have hired the locals, this would have been done already. And instead, now here's probably another year in the makings thanks to this criminal regime.
And God knows what will happen in that year. You know, I was talking with, I forget who it was the other night, but, you know, we're coming up on the second anniversary of Katrina, and nothing's getting any better.
Well, you know, Ray Nagin is having a demonstration in New Orleans on anniversary, so anybody that can make it down to New Orleans for that, I highly encourage them to do so. And, of course, I'm going to plug Jim Yancey's site. He's giving that house away for $20, raffle ticket, and people can go by his site, www.jccsc.org, and donate to $20. If you win the house and you don't want it, you can give it back to Jim. He can raffle it off again, or you can give it to one of the families that really need it down there. But I hope everybody will go do it. Jim has got this house building down to a fine art. I was down there week before last, and he is putting up one home a day. In 100 days, he's getting 100 homes up. The long-term recovery people are lucky to get up 20 houses in that time period.
I don't doubt it. That kind of reminds me of Henry Kaiser and the Liberty ships during World War II. He got to the point where he was turning out a ship a week, and when nobody else could. And it's a profound level of dedication, Sarge. And I need to get Jim back on the show soon anyway to talk about these toxic trailers. This Washington Post story that came out last Friday, I believe it was. Well, it just horrifies me with the formaldehyde and the carcinogenic preservative materials that were used, and the sickness that over 100,000 people are having to put up with, and, you know, just sort of off the radar.
Oh, by the way, let me drop this, and I'm going to do a shameless promotion here. But on my show Sunday, my special guest, Mike Malloy.
Oh, wonderful.
So everyone tune in, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and an hour before that, King David McKenzie has a 30-minute commentary I bet you everybody will love, too. So I hope they'll tune in.
Tremendous, tremendous.
And by the way, King David and Sean Ryan said to pass on my hellos to you and to the Horn audience, and as you know, we at NovaM really support you guys, and we wish you all the very best.
Well, thank you, Sarge. Thank you very kindly, and I'm sure folks will tune in Sunday morning to catch Mike on your show.
Well, I'm going to terminate this because I know it's costing you money. And so, Bob, thanks for everything you do, and I look forward to having you back on.
Thank you, Sarge. We'll do it real soon, okay?
Okay.
Bye now. You know, that here in West Virginia, we have a pretty strong, and God knows it takes a lot of fighting to keep it strong, prevailing wage law. And the reason behind something like a prevailing wage law, be it federal or state, is to make sure that people's tax dollars are not used to, what's the best way to put this? I'm sure Wayne could say this better than I can. But to make sure that we don't use federal tax dollars to lowball people into poor wage jobs on public projects. Obviously, a bridge on the Gulf Coast is a public project. Hell, it's probably a federal project. But it's also Mississippi. If you recall, right after Katrina, George Bush came out and suspended the federal prevailing wage rates for Katrina recovery. And it caused such an outcry that he had to back. It was one of the few times that he's had to back off and back down. So you find out that God knows the way that when you pay substandard wages on a public works project, the only reason you're paying those substandard wages, it's not going to reduce the cost of the project. Straighten me out, Wayne, if I'm getting this wrong. It's not going to reduce the cost of the project. The project is still going to cost the same thing. But the wage difference goes into the contractors and the subcontractors' pockets. This is about the difference between a Camaro and a Corvette, really, more than it is the difference between... And that difference comes out of the difference between quality master craftsman workers and fly-by-night jacklegs. And it's that simple. you know, Sarge says this contractor was had the contract pulled and it'll have to be rebid and everything. The contractor should be prosecuted. The contractor should be doing jail time, prison time, you know, that's measured in years. Because, after all, we have a lot of criminal statutes out there that apply to you and me, should you and me step out of line, you and I. And no one will hesitate to throw the books at us. It's about time that the criminal laws of this country were applied to the people who have deemed themselves to be our betters. At least that's the way I look at things. It's about 25 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the big stack of news. Let's see. Chicago Tribune says FBI director contradicts Gonzalez. not apparently, but actually contradicts. But out of it all today, an interesting announcement from Arlen Specter. Who, again, just to repeat this, was so mean to Fredo Gonzalez that Fox News had to font him as a Democrat. But he has announced that he intends to review... Oh, this just kind of makes me get all sick inside. He intends to review the Senate testimony of Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, as well as the testimony of Samuel Alito, with an eye toward discovering if their reversal of several long-standing opinions is in conflict with the testimony, the sworn testimony, and the promises therein that they made to senators in order to get confirmation. Do you think that senators would have voted for Roberts and Alito if they had known that the first opportunity they got, they were going to go to war against Brown versus Board of Education? Do you think? I don't. Because that's one of those third rail politics kind of things that to suggest that we need to overturn Brown versus Board of Education is a sort of a secular heresy in this country, or should be. Because Brown, in its own right, overturned Plessy versus Ferguson, which had set up separate but equal status among the races in this country. And Brown versus Board of Education acknowledged that separate but equal was a functional impossibility. Just the same, however, just the same, the Roberts Court went after Brown versus Board of Education with a meat axe. And the next chance they get, they'll do the same thing again. And they'll do it again until they've utterly overruled Brown versus Board of Education. And where this country will go after that, I don't want to contemplate. Specter said about Roberts, quote, "There are things he has said, and I want to see how well he has complied with it." Of course, this doesn't mean that they will move to get rid of Roberts or Alito, although that would be the single best thing they could possibly do. Dick Durbin of Illinois, who's also on the Judiciary Committee, and he voted against Alito and Roberts, good for him, said such a review, quote, "could lead us to have a different approach," and that senators need to be more probing with their questioning of judicial nominees. He added, "Certainly Justice Roberts left a distinct impression of his service as Chief Justice, and his performance on the court since, I think, has been in conflict with many of the statements he has made privately as well as to the committee." Durbin said this at a time that he didn't even know that the Specter was talking about engaging in this inquiry. Durbin also said, "They're off to a very disturbing start, these two new justices. I'm afraid before long they will call into question some of the most established laws and precedents in our nation. With all due respect, Senator Durbin, they already have." they gutted the First Amendment in the Bong Hits for Jesus case, Senator Durbin. And like I said, they took a meat axe to Brown versus Board of Education. Dear God, is there anything more significant? So, I don't know. I hope this happens, but I'd like to see it done with some teeth, not just with an eye toward the future. As long as we're on this perjury kick, let's start looking at all the people who have perjured themselves in front of the Congress. Samuel Alito perjured himself with his blithering along about the importance of stare decisis. Roberts perjured himself. What do we say about a nation whose two of whose highest judicial officers in the country are perjurers? And of course, it would be simple enough to sit here and say, you know, we were right all along, and we were. You knew that Alito was poison. And you could tick off at the time probably 6 or 7 different reasons that his nomination should have been rejected. And you could say the same thing about John Roberts. You knew that he was poison. You knew that he's a liar. You knew that he has no business sitting on that court. But we had a Republican-controlled Senate at the time who told, in no uncertain terms, the likes of Robert Byrd and Mary Landrieu and Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor and Ben Nelson and Bill Nelson and Joe Lieberman and the rest of the mealy-mouthed mugwumps, that if they so much as considered holding up these nominations, that they would destroy the Senate and its traditions, and the devil take the hindmost. And none of those Democratic senators had the guts to look the other side in the eye and say, then do it. And you know what? Hindsight being 2020, we would be in a far better place if they had. Wouldn't it have been fun to watch the Republicans try to filibuster the Employee Free Choice Act, only to realize that they had shot themselves in the foot over a pair of perjurers like Roberts and Alito? That would have been really, really, really fun to watch. So this is a story worth paying attention to. To see what Arlen Specter does. And oddly enough, Specter got his idea based on a conversation with Justice Stephen Breyer at the Aspen Ideas Festival in Colorado. He had previously suggested that John Roberts and the conservative majority were flouting stare decisis. And he said, quote, "It is not often in the law that so few have so quickly changed so much." And that was in the school desegregation, the Seattle and Louisville cases, where they took the meat axe to Brown versus Board of Education. So it will be interesting to see, it'll be very interesting to see where this goes and whether anything comes of it. Erwin Chemerinsky, who is a Duke University law professor, said, "The reality is, although John Roberts and Samuel Alito promised to follow precedent, they either explicitly or implicitly overruled precedent. It is important to point out how the confirmation hearings were a sham." Well, thank you, Professor Chemerinsky. There is nothing you can do about it now. They're there for life, but it's important that we look to future hearings. I disagree. Of course, you know, this is another one of those Bob Kincaid Pollyanna moments where he thinks that the Constitution is really real and forceful and has meaning. But no, those two no-good SOBs could be impeached and removed. Getting a transcript of their testimony should be fairly easy. once you've looked at their testimony, gauging what they've done with what they testified to, makes a colorable case of perjury. Or at the very least, some level of false swearing. Lying to Congress, perhaps. These poor, poor senators. Yeah, you know, it would, you could almost feel sorry for them. But no. They knew they were being lied to. They knew. But they didn't have the guts for the fight. And that's one of the fundamental problems this country country faces. Meanwhile, while we were talking about Fredo Gonzalez, and while we were talking about Harriet Myers yesterday, and Josh Bolton, and inherent contempt, a little something else happened in the House of Representatives. You've probably heard about it by now. But following the lead of Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, or I'm sorry, Barbara Lee, following Congresswoman Barbara Lee's lead by a vote of 399-24, and that number is highly significant. The House passed a bill yesterday that will prevent both permanent military bases in Iraq and will stand as a bar to U.S. control over Iraqi oil resources. The bill was H.R. 2929, and it declares that it is the policy of the United States not to establish any military installation or base for the purpose of providing for the permanent stationing of United States armed forces in Iraq, and not to exercise United States control of the oil resources of Iraq, and it prohibits the use of funds for these purposes. Kind of reminds you of the Boland Amendment back during the Iran-Contra days, doesn't it? The Boland Amendment was, of course, law, federal law, that was publicly flouted by Ronald Reagan and his evil minions, many of whom are still in the government today. And they should have been impeached for it. And everyone involved should have been imprisoned for it. And some might have been imprisoned for it, but for the Christmas pardon massacre of George H.W. Bush in letting the Iran-Contra monsters off the hook so that they, in turn, wouldn't drop the dime on him. Now, of course, it will have to go over to the Senate, but remember that number, H.R. 2929. I don't know how it will be numbered in the Senate. But it will be curious to see if sleazy gut buckets like Jeff Sessions or Mitch McConnell or Trent Lott actually stymie this effort as well with another filibuster. It'll be interesting to see if Harry Reid lets them. Barbara Lee said in her remarks, the administration has refused to do that, namely state that they do not intend to have permanent military bases. In fact, she says, there are conflicting accounts as to who will decide if we stay in Iraq permanently. When the president was asked that question at a press conference last October, he said, any decisions on permanency in Iraq will be made by the Iraqi government. But when Secretary of Defense Gates was asked, is our presence left up to the Iraqis or do we make the decision, in testimony before the Senate this February, Secretary Gates said, we will make that decision, sir. Barbara Lee went on to say, More recently, the administration has further muddied the waters by saying that they envision a United States military presence in Iraq similar to that we have in South Korea, where American troops have been stationed for more than 50 years and won't be leaving anytime soon. We must soundly reject, she says, the vision of an open-ended occupation as bad policy that undermines the safety of our troops, and recognize it for what it is, another recruiting poster for terrorists. To those who raise objections or want to suggest that this is only a symbolic measure or raise semantic questions about what a permanent base is, let me say this. This is a serious issue, and I think we all recognize how much is at stake. The question is simple. Do we support an endless occupation, or do we oppose it? And again, I note to you that that passed, H.R. 2929, by a vote of 399-24. And that should say something. I hope it says something. I hope it wasn't a symbolic act. I hope it wasn't just some hollow piece of pre-election year legislative blather. God, I hope that. Because, of course, you know that part and parcel of why the Iraqi parliament walked away from for its August vacation is because they have not yet bowed to the will of the Bush administration and set up their oil law to the benefit of ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell and BP and all the rest. Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll take a break and come back, maybe make things a little bit more domestic. Have a look at some issues in the country itself. Is that okay by you? You know the phone number, 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. Lines are open. Jump right in if you want to. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed Lesbian Bible Study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible. Thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't. So what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is strictly confidential, isn't it? Stand by
your man. Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential. Gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio. Exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
Thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
You have the right to remain silent! Let me shut up!
Kiss me riding dirty. 14 before the hour, and let's go over to the oh my god I can't believe it department. You remember the hissy fit that the American Family Association and its bunco artist leader Don Wildman had because Disney was going to Disney has gay days when gay folk are invited to Disney just to enjoy the park in comfort and safety and security. And of course they put on the boycott at Disney. Well, you know, I hate the American Family Association. I just despise them. Out there doing little old ladies out of their social security checks because we're doing the work of Jesus. But I, by the same token, while I hate them for who they are, there are lessons to be learned from their persistence. And I hope that perhaps that we can model some of that persistence in another campaign that's going on now. The name of the campaign is Put the Gun Down, Elmo!
Elmo likes a handgun!
No, this is just stunning. I mean, it's one of those where you read it and you go, nah, this one's from The Onion! No, it isn't. There's a National Rifle Association, you know, the National Republican Rifle Association. There's a National Rifle Association website out there that is offering... Oh, thank God I ate a good while ago, or it would be wanting to see the light of dinner, would be wanting to see the light of day again. They're offering discounted tickets to Sesame Place and other kid-friendly theme parks in return for donations to the National Republican Rifle Association's political arm. The name of that political group is the Institute for Legislative Action, the ILA. Oh, for God's sakes. Brian Miller is the executive director of Ceasefire New Jersey. Good on you, Brian. And he says, it looks to me like a PR nightmare, and it should be. Sesame Street has entered into a deal to offer discounted tickets for children and families to go to Sesame Place in exchange for a political donation to the lobbying arm, the political arm of the NRA. Wow. Wow. Now, here's how it works. According to the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, and the Institute for Legislative Action, by the way, you know, this is the gang that goes around trying to get every state in the union to make sure that you can pack your pistol on the street and you know, shoot people that make you nervous. You know, the shoot first and ask questions later laws. The NRA ILA website offers the price of a two-ticket donation for $50, about half the regular ticket price. Then there are other discount prices, four tickets for $100, six for $150, eight for $200. Ashley Varner is a spokescreep for the NRA. And Ashley Varner, I'm assuming Ashley is a girl, says the NRA is a family-friendly organization.
Well, a family that shoots together.
Well, okay. It would be nice if we could... We progressives, liberals, sane gun owners could convince the Sesame Street people and Sesame Place to get out of this deal with the organization that works harder than any other in this country to make sure we have more Columbines, more Virginia Techs, more people in more bell towers with more clown suits and high-powered rifles. More handgun deaths every year. That, you know, really, that's not something Sesame Street or Sesame Place wants to be associated with. Today, Sesame Street has been brought to you by G. G is for Glock. Hi, kids. Do you know that you can have 19 9mm rounds in your Glock 19? They're fun. Say it with me, kids. Glock. And brought to you by the number 9 for 9mm. Kids, a 9mm is very similar to a 38 caliber bullet. But it's a great way to learn the metric system. Oh, God. And just, you know, just for your edification, it might be worth noting that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, says that between 1999 and 2004, over 900 children and young people under 18 years old died from unintentional gun injuries. Brian Miller says, and I quote, "We think it is just wrong to use a kids' park, and this is for small children, to raise money for an organization that is doing everything it can to protect gun industry profits at the expense of safety, and that includes children's safety, and frankly, Mr. Miller, I would add, at the expense of children's lives." Gun owners don't need the NRA. The NRA does nothing for gun owners. The NRA is entirely a creature of the gun industry, and primarily the handgun industry. So, you know, if you're sitting around, you don't have anything to do, you can go over to gunguys.com and look up Sesame Place's PR Nightmare, Elmo Put Down the Gun.
But Elmo likes Glock.
Well, what was it? A couple of weeks ago, we saw the story on the internets, on the series of tubes somewhere, about the mother who brought home an Elmo, an Elmo toy that was singing, "Elmo's gonna kill you." And it was back when our kids were little that we bought a Tinky Winky toy that talked for one of our children. It didn't just talk for one of the children. It was a talking Tinky Winky. Jesus, it's a tough grammar night here. Yes, it's Tinky Winky that only one of our children can hear. Oh, God, some days it's not worth getting up and chewing through the straps. This Tinky Winky toy, you'd cycle through all the things it said, and finally you'd get to the one where you'd press Tinky Winky's little purple palm or whatever, and it would say,
"Run away, run away."
And then you'd press it again, and it'd say, "I got a gun." I'm not kidding. I am really, really not kidding.
"Got a gun, run away,
run away."
"I got a gun."
Oh, Jesus. So, you know, go by gunguys.com, look at the story, follow the link over to Ceasefire New Jersey, and maybe give them a hand, write a letter, sign a petition, do something, because this is just creepy. Let's talk to Susan in Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
I got to tell you, that story just boggles my mind, but you know what made me, what really jumped out at me?
What's that?
That one person's name.
Which one?
Varner.
Varner? Am I missing something here?
Long, hot summer.
Help me. I must be slow tonight.
Paul Newman.
Yeah. Paul Newman, based on a Faulkner story?
Uh-huh. Somebody's been reading their Faulkner.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, that's a little weird.
Ain't it so? Okay, here's some more weirdness for you on the domestic front. Oh, really? Has a website.
That he does.
There's no hate there. Nothing like those left-wing hate sites like the Daily Kos.
Right.
Yeah, said site is now being investigated by the Secret Service because apparently a couple of people got on there and threatened Hillary Clinton's life.
Oh, Lord. We're rubber, they're glue, it bounces off us and sticks to them. That doesn't rhyme, does it?
It's just the irony.
Well, God is a God of irony, Susan.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't make this up.
You couldn't pay to have this stuff written.
Uh-uh. No, they would say, no, there's no way this can happen.
But it does.
Apparently what happened was... somebody, one of the bloggers, spotted this, and somebody said, "Well, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that. That's a no-no." So he said, "What the hell?" He called the Secret Service. They thought he was a crank right up until the time he gave them the site. He read what they had said, and then that's when they got really, really interested.
I'll be darned.
There's an article on it on the Horn website in the news section.
Okay, so you've already got this up on the network blog?
Yeah, I laugh myself silly over it. It just cracked me up. But the thing that really got me was this guy was getting lambasted in the comment section of HuffPost for calling the Secret Service.
Oh, well, they do it to us.
Give me a break. Let me see. Here's some real good reasons why you should do something like that. It's called John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, George Wallace.
Yeah, even George Wallace.
Hey, I didn't like him. I didn't like his politics, but he didn't deserve to end up getting a bullet in him.
No, he didn't.
And I have nightmares over the thought of somebody putting one in Barack Obama because there's this really bad undercurrent in this country.
Well, we already know that, what was it? Was it CBS News that had to turn off its blogs because every time they posted a story about Obama, somebody was there just spewing right-wing, you know, Klan-type race hatred?
Yeah.
It is scary.
There is this really, really scary undercurrent to the American society that is dangerous.
Well, again, I talked about it last night. That wonderful young man who had such a wonderfully the football heroic moment in the Fiesta Bowl last January, proposed to his girlfriend on camera, and he's got to have armed security guards for his wedding because Idahoans are calling in, so you can't marry her. You're mongrelizing the races.
Yeah, well, I lived in Idaho for several years with a bunch of stupid rednecks.
I understand that, but it's not just Idaho. I mean, this stuff all ties together, Susan. This, you know, how many points did Bob Corker beat Harold Ford by in Tennessee? Not that Harold Ford is some sort of the liberal paragon, but you know, facts are facts. That he won by the margin of people that he was able to bring out based on nothing other than plain old fashioned dirt dumb redneck Southern race fear.
Yeah, and it's not just in the South, it's in the Pacific.
Right, I mean, it's Idaho. It's
gave birth to the order, for crying out.
Yeah, it's Idaho. It's Tennessee. It's Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. But you know what? It's also Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And it's New York, and it's Connecticut, and it's Illinois and Indiana. There's nobody. Nobody's got a claim to having a state that has no race hate in it.
Oh yeah, tell me about it. And, you know, if you think you do, you're dreaming.
That's what makes...
And that's why I am so terrified about candidates like... You know, I don't like Barack's politics. I have no intention of voting for him. But I don't want the man dead.
No.
Too many people die.
No. You're absolutely right. And, you know...
And that's the reason he should have called the secret police. And I'm not the secret police. Secret Service. And I'm glad he did.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I'll get into it in the second, third hour, Susan. You remind me of something. You know, Mitt Romney has had his macaca moment, and it's not getting the legs that it really deserves. Are you familiar with this?
They were holding the signs.
Well, yeah, it's a sign that says no to, and he's sitting there smiling like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush. Romney is, and it says no to Obama, Osama, and Chelsea's mama.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so he comes out and he says, I don't look at all the signs when I'm having pictures taken. I have a lot of pictures taken with people. I don't really spend all that much time looking at the signs and the T-shirts and the buttons. I don't have anything to say about a sign somebody, and this is the key words, somebody else was holding, okay?
Yeah, and he's standing there holding
it. And he's holding it up for the camera. Yeah. No to Obama, Osama, and Chelsea's mama. And by the way, you remember the Get a Clue Morans photo?
Yeah.
From the beginning of the war, the idiot with the St. Louis Cardinals T-shirt on says Morans. Get a clue, Morans. You know, it became sort of the poster child for right wing stupidity.
Right.
Well, this may be the heir apparent and successor to that because it says no to Obama, and Obama is spelled correctly. Osama is spelled correctly, and Chelsea's MOMA.
Oh, Lord.
No to Obama, Osama, and Chelsea's Museum of Modern Art. God, if they weren't so dangerous, they'd just be a laugh riot, wouldn't they, Susan?
Yeah, if they weren't so bloody dangerous and they didn't have their finger on the launch codes, they would be hysterically funny.
You know, but
like watching the Three Stooges.
But this is not getting near the traffic it deserves. Bart Kopp's featured it a couple of times. I've been meaning to talk about it for a while. You know, this is a guy endorsing because he's running for the Republican presidential nomination, Susan. I mean, it's not like he's running on the Democratic ticket. He is having to pander and bow and scrape and kowtow to, you know, the element that thinks that Obama and Osama and Hillary Clinton are all the same kind of person. And he deserves to be run out of town on a rail for it.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see it get a lot more traction. I'd like to keep him talking about it. But you know, we're dealing with the mainstream media, and you know, they had to be practically beaten over the head with the macaca moment before they paid any attention to it.
Right.
And it's the same thing's going to have to happen here. But Romney needs to be run out of the race.
Well, it probably wouldn't hurt.
You know, he has no business even thinking of being president of the United States.
Oh, no, he's
an animal abuser. He has now endorsed the equating of a terrorist 15,000 miles away with the two leading contenders, whether I like it or not, for the Democratic nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And we can no longer tolerate that kind of BS in our political system or our political structure.
Yeah, and the way I want him out of the race is I want him embarrassed publicly and forced to withdraw. I'm certainly not going to be one of these freakoids who goes out, picks up a gun, and puts a bullet in somebody.
Or advocates that someone does.
Yeah, and that's why it's wrong. You don't go saying you're going to do this or you even want to do this. That's why threatening the president...
But when you run around equating
crime.
When you run around equating Senator Clinton and Senator Obama to Osama bin Laden, isn't that the upshot of what you're trying to accomplish, Susan? Aren't you trying to incite the more unstable, weird,
yes,
bizarre, gun-toting freakazoid element of the Republican Party to go out and do murder?
Yes, but the thing is, can you prove it legally? That's the problem.
I know, but it happens every day. You know, Glenn Beck talking about how he wants to kill Hillary Clinton, or having a guest
now,
who says that.
That's what I don't understand. Glenn Beck and all of that Yahoo in the little black dress, I will never understand. They have come right out and said, I want this person dead. On here. Why weren't they arrested?
Because their freedom of speech is stronger than your freedom of speech, Susan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I guess it's time to pull Animal Farm off the shelf again. You know, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Yeah, and you'll notice that the only presidential candidates and presidents lately who have gotten assassinated were Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With the exception of Ronald Reagan, and that was completely avoidable. And of course, it's worth remembering that the George Bush family was having dinner with the Hinckley family that night.
Yeah, and
but we're not going to do the conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and you do know where Hinckley came from, don't you?
Sure.
Where he was raised.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Same suburb of Dallas where when Kennedy was assassinated, everybody applauded in the schools.
Yeah, I know. I know. Susan, we've got to roll on.
Yeah, you have a nice day.
You too. Take care, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's see. We're going to forego the news and just roll through phone calls here. Robert's calling from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
You doing
okay
today?
I'm doing great.
Great, great. Yes, this dog. You used the word correctly yesterday, dog and pony show of this... between Hillary and Obama. It looks like they don't have much news, so they're just making up crap.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, the more that the American people can be pulled away from some notion of actually talking about issues, the better the news networks like it. Because, again, journalists have become very, very lazy people. They're not even journalists anymore, and all they want to talk about is the horse race aspect of the campaign.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the real news that I just noticed on Crooks and Liars this morning was about the 50 Filipinos that were kidnapped. They all thought they were going to Dubai to work and have new jobs. Like, one said he's going to be a telephone operator, and he's real happy about this new life. And then once they got on the plane, the captain said, we're going to go to Baghdad. And they're all very upset until the company that was in charge of them, Kuwait something rather, pulled out a gun and said, shut up. And so they're all working on the American embassy. So without, of course, equipment and gloves and, you know, shoes and stuff like that. And they're all...
Body armor.
Body armor, yeah. So basically, I mean, that's the kind of news that you're actually missing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that not me or not you, but America.
America, right.
You know, this, the fact of the matter is, Katie Couric or Brian Williams or Charlie Gibson over at ABC, there's enough stuff out there every day to do a two-hour newscast. But, you know, the suits would rather run some reality television program, and, you know, after all, it's hard enough to do 1 hour of news and avoid real news in the process. I mean, like I said, starting the program, the lead story on CNN's webpage had nothing to do with Robert Mueller dropping the dime on Fredo Gonzalez today. It didn't. It wasn't the subpoenaing of Karl Rove by the Senate Judiciary Committee. No, no, no. It was Michael Vick's arraignment. It was an arraignment, for heaven's sakes, Robert. It's where you go in and the guy says, okay, the judge says you're charged, and the guy, and he says, how do you plead? And the guy says, not guilty, and they walk away.
Right.
I mean, it's a non-event. And that was the lead story on CNN's webpage. I'm sick of it. I'm disgusted by it, Robert.
Well, I mean, it gets to the point of, you know, why have the TV anymore? Because all the other, you know, news shows throughout the world kind of imitate the content of CNN to some degree. I mean, we have NHK here, and they pretty much follow what, you know, other main stories are being shown throughout the world. So this one example of the Filipinos in Kuwait, I mean, Kuwait, Baghdad would never get any traction at all because no responsible news stations would cover it. So why should they?
Precisely. Precisely.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm curious, what kind of news coverage are you getting in Japan, Robert, about this issue of the first Korean hostage being killed and the effort to keep the rest of them from being executed in Iraq?
Well, as you know, if it doesn't involve a Japanese, it's not going to get too much coverage. So, it may get 3 or 4 minutes, and that's about it. I mean, if it were Japanese involved, it would be on all day, and it would be just the endless talk of the nation. But I remember at one time, I think there was a Japanese person that was kidnapped in Iraq, and money was actually paid, I think, by the Japanese government. And she was coming back, and people would harass her. Japanese would actually harass her and blame her for causing problems. Because that is the ultimate crime in Japan, is if you disturb the wall, what they call the wall, the harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And that was her crime. And it took her a long time to get, you know, out of that blame game of being the victim and being kidnapped. How dare you be kidnapped and cause problems and have the government pay ransom money for you? So,
upsetting the apple cart.
Exactly, right. So I'm not too sure how this is going to work in South Korea, because, you know, Korea is very different from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
There will be some element of that. I mean, why did you go to Afghanistan and, you know, cause these problems and stuff like that? So,
yeah, Afghanistan. I said Iraq. My bad.
Right. I imagine that a lot of South Koreans right now are being quite anti-Muslim because of this, because, you know, that's how it works.
And yet these are Korean Christian aid workers, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Going in with their, naivete and not thinking anything bad will happen to them or God will protect them and stuff like that.
Because I couldn't remember if there were any Korean military as part of the coalition of the billing or not.
I think there's like 200, and I think that was part of the demand of the Afghan Taliban, is that the 200-odd South Koreans in Afghanistan should leave, I think.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but anyhow, to switch over to the democracy issue very quickly before I let you go, I was thinking, you know, I had one professor in Tallahassee where I studied at Florida State University for one of my graduate degrees,
mm-hmm.
and she had, believe it or not, 3 PhDs. She was a communication professor. So I think she had a PhD in communications and a PhD in business and a PhD in maybe in psychology, perhaps.
Does that mean when you addressed her, you had to call her doctor?
That's a good idea. I never thought about that. That's maybe why I didn't get such a great grade. I don't know.
You were shorting her on her doctors.
I'm telling you. But yeah, I mean that's 9 years of just doctoral research, and on top of your, you know, 3 more years of master's, and on top of your 4 more years for your bachelor's degree. And I'm sure there's other people out there that are just as smart, you know, maybe 2 PhDs, 3 PhDs. I don't care. Geniuses, as you once said. You want a president that's a genius. And I'm thinking, why don't we have these people run in as president? We get all these morons, that can't even speak English right. I mean, I got Japanese students that speak better English than George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Goes without saying, sure.
Well, hell, I mean, even Reagan, I think when he did that famous misquote about, terrorists are going to attack this country and so are we, I noticed that he was actually reading from his paper on that. So it's not only a speaking problem, I think it's a reading problem or a cognition problem.
Well, you know, his mama has long said that he is dyslexic. That's
surely good. We can do better than this, but
yeah.
This is the dog and pony show of democracy that's being replayed in every single country. I mean, even here we got an idiot called Abe, who even the brain dead conservatives in Ehime Prefecture, this is a conservative bastion. They're all now, you know, like rats leaving a sinking ship, leaving the conservative party of, you know, the LDP party. Because they've actually started doing the mathematics, and they've realized that their wages have actually gone down by half over the past 10 years. And this is because of the LDP party.
And in Japan, for wages to drop like that is significant, just based on the everyday prices that people pay for things like food to begin with,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. I mean
it's always been my understanding that something like a steak or, you know, even like, you know, a bottle of American liquor, something like that, it is incredibly expensive.
Right, right. I mean, a six pack of beer will cost you about $17 here. I mean, we were just going to, we're having a wine party today to end the semester, and there was one six pack for $17, another six pack for maybe $11.
I mean, and is that like Sapporo or domestic beer, $17?
Domestic beer.
Wow.
This is not the import. The import beer would cost you about $3 a bottle. So, in fact, I mean, I bought my first six-pack after 14 years, maybe a couple weeks ago. It's just because of the prices, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Too much Scottish blood in me, perhaps. But, these morons finally did the mathematics, and I give them credit for that, and, you know, they're leaving the ship, you know, also because they messed up the pension system. You know how conservatives hate pensions. And
sure.
So they switched over to a computerized system maybe back in the 1980s, but some people's pension numbers, because they had different jobs, they had different numbers. All of the numbers didn't get entered. And so they were getting screwed over when they retired. So instead of getting $2,000 a month, they were getting $400, $600. And then the government said, well, too bad. After 5 years, we have a 5-year deadline, so can't be changed. That was finally overturned, but they lost a lot of votes on that. So we may have a sea change in the elections and later on this next month for the upper house, I think it is. But Abe is still going to stay on. He said he's not going to quit despite the bad showing. But
his base,
I think if you do the math and you look at your wages and has your life gotten better or worse, you got to be able to say, hey, this is, you know, come to one conclusion only.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, and the same math applies over here, Robert.
Yeah.
But, you know, labor unions, social justice organizations, tons of organizations have been begging the American people to do the math, too. And
right.
It's not complicated mathematics. We're not talking about upper level, you know, math analysis or statistics or you know, anything.
Right.
No, this is simple law. You know, this is long division and multiplication. And the
right.
American people cannot get it. The American people refuse. This isn't can't. This is won't. And that's
right.
What makes things so disturbing, Robert. Because
right.
We can, you know, the AFL-CIO, the Change to Win coalition. All these organizations are saying, vote your daggum wallet.
Right.
And every time they say that, there's a Republican operative standing there saying, you know, them Democrats want your Bible. And I'm not going to tell you what they want to do with your Bible, but it's really nasty.
Right, right, right.
And all of a sudden, everybody who's got, you know, they've picked their pencil up and they've kind of touched the tip to their tongue, you know, and they're going to do their gazintas and their takeaways and their ciphering. And the minute they're going to do vile things with your Bible, and the pencils get put down, the pads get put away, and, well, I got to vote for the Bible.
Right, right.
It's frustrating as can be.
Well, especially when you realize that I think we saw in the news a few months ago that 30% of the high school people are not even finishing high school now. High school students aren't even finishing high school. I mean, dropping out. I think in Detroit it was, what, 64%?
The story is the demographics that have been projected. Downtown Detroit's going to have everything this side of Tumbleweeds in another 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally, in that area, it's like living in, I don't know, it must be what the Maya felt like when Chichen Itza got depopulated.
Right. I mean, you're looking at a permanent underclass. I mean, which is, you know, what the Republicans would love, of course, but...
dumber we are, the easier we are to lead.
Well, you can't do the math, can you? I mean...
can't even do the gazintas, you know?
No. You don't even know what a PhD is. I mean, so how would...
Piled
you
higher and deeper, by God. Piled higher and deeper.
Yeah.
That's those pointy-headed intellectuals.
Yeah. So. No.
There's so much that needs to change in this country, I don't know if it can. I just don't know if it can, Robert.
I get depressed. I mean, as you heard me yesterday, I mean, I just don't see how any person... Especially when you got the list of candidates up there already, and Obama's going, well, nuclear power is an option we got to explore. Look at the math. Do the damn.
Well, look, Robert. This is the same guy who said that all options remain on the table with regard to Iran.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you or anybody else, but that when you say something like that, it just makes my blood run cold.
Oh, didn't he say something about Scooter Libby shouldn't be prosecuted or something like that?
Well, I don't know if he said anything about Scooter, but he darn sure said that he would never support impeachment.
Yeah.
You know, I'm...
It blows my mind. I mean,
this is a guy with a Harvard Law education. He should understand that impeachment, Robert, is not an extraordinary... Like I said earlier, it's not an extraordinary remedy.
But doesn't Alberto have that same thing?
How so?
A Harvard law degree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The worth of that has gone down. This current crowd is really taking a lot of the starch out of the Ivy League.
I hope so. You think there'd be some better graduates coming up? I mean, this is...
Well, I've come to the conclusion that Harvard and Yale are nothing but... brick-and-mortar MySpaces.
Yeah.
With lots of money and attitude.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know.
It's
hard to say. Robert, it's so good talking to you. Have a great day. I'm glad you're getting a little bit of break with the semester coming to an end.
Yeah, finally. So, you take care, as always.
Will do. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And rolling onward to Mike, calling from Woodstock, New York. Haven't heard from you in a while, my friend. You doing all right?
I'm fine. It's been a little while, and it's a fine summer night here in the Catskills in Woodstock, New York.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm just hanging out here pretty close to the stream, listening to the water rush by, thinking about all the crummy things that are going on. But one thing that bugged me today, I heard Howard Dean basically harping on a day or two ago saying that, impeachment's too distracting, there's too much legislation that needs to be passed, we don't need to be talking about that. And I'm really, like, sick of these Democrats, Pelosi. I think Nancy Sheehan should go kick her butt in San Francisco and take her seat.
I wouldn't grieve about that in the least. Like the conversation I was having with Robert there, Mike. I don't know what we have to do to get our elected representatives to take the Constitution seriously. It's not, you know, it's not like some sort of religious icon that we bring out at the festival of old parchment documents. And the 4th of July is Independence Day, not the 4th of July, and it's not an excuse to get loaded and shoot off your handguns. It is a reverence and a remembrance of everything that is important about this country, and nothing's more important than the Constitution, and that seems to resonate with you, and it resonates with me and a lot of people listening to this program, but it doesn't resonate with our leadership.
You know, I was at a... I play bass also, among other things, but I was playing bass at a 4th of July celebration, and there were some guys on stage reading, I guess it was the Declaration of Independence, and I didn't quite realize at first what they were reading, and it was really, really radical.
It is a radical document, especially once you get past the part that everybody knows or memorized in grade school. When you get to the enumerated list of offenses that George III had perpetrated against the people of the colonies, most of those you can put it into a word processor, Mike, and you can do a global search and replace and take out the word George and just replace it with the word Bush, and it still scans for the most part. Go ahead.
Well, I think here's the remedy, and I've been thinking long and hard about this, and you've discussed it as well. You know, in France, when they get pissed off,
That's okay.
Okay, they have a general strike and they shut the country down. And I think we need to stop. I think business as usual needs to stop.
Oh my goodness!
I think you're right. I think a general strike would be the best thing that could possibly happen to this country. I also think there's every likelihood that pigs will fly before the American sheep will do that. I don't know how bad it has to get. But see, the difference between us and the French is the French aren't willing for it to get that bad. They've been through bad places, and they're not willing to go back, so consequently, they will throw a stick in the spokes and grind it all to a halt and say, let's fix this before it gets any worse. I don't know if we've got that kind of gumption, Mike, do we?
I think there's far too many iPod telephones, cable TV. I think there's too many computers and cell phones, and I think there's too many people just cruising around too fast in cars for us to slow down enough to think that out. And I think in France they have a strong labor movement, which ours has been decimated by Republicans.
Exactly. And don't forget debt. Everybody's got some debt, but I get the sense that maybe European countries, and I could be easily straightened out, they are not in debt the way that we are in debt. Because, among other things, they have governments that will demand a certain amount of accountability from their corporate entities within their countries. You know, we would, at least this administration, would rather hell yawn open and just wipe us out than to call Citibank to account. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the downside to all of this. Yeah, you know, I like the idea that you're sitting by a babbling brook there and you're getting that peace, and it affords you an opportunity to think calmly and coolly about what's going on, because that's something that Americans have largely abandoned, Mike.
I think in a lot of ways America has lost the idea of what true spirituality is, and true spirituality is a reconnection to yourself. It's a reconnection to God through nature, actually, through the plants, and I think this is what we're lacking. We're so far away from that now. But here's my last thought. I took a trip to Northern Virginia, down to the Christiansburg area, and I actually passed through your state. I thought of you as I was cruising through it. For some reason, the speed limit was a bit higher there.
Yeah, we go up to 70.
So it's funny because I have a car, as you know, that runs on vegetable oil. And before I left on the trip, I had to think long and hard about the bumper stickers on my car. I used to have three. One faded out, the Peach Bush sticker faded out, but the two that are left, one says, it looks like a Bush Cheney 04 bumper sticker, but if you look close, it says Bush Cheated 04.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing you see. And then the second thing that everybody will see, because I travel slowly, because I believe in slowing down to save fuel, even though I'm burning vegetable oil, the second bumper sticker says the road to hell is paved by Republicans.
Ooh.
And I drove that from Woodstock, New York, basically, burning vegetable oil, which is burns far less CO2. And I drove it all the way up almost to the North Carolina border. And I didn't get shot at. Nobody gave me the finger. And a few people gave me a thumbs up. And my point here is that I've been driving the same car with similar radical bumper stickers for years since Bush has been elected. And even in the Northeast, the liberal Northeast, even in places like Massachusetts, you know, I would get virulent reactions. Now things have changed. I feel a change coming across America. So although things seem really messed up, I think there is a change going on. I think people are getting the message that they need to wake up now. And even in the deep South, which I consider that part of Virginia, I saw that people weren't reacting totally negatively, and that's my last point.
Well, I think that's very well made, Mike. And you know, Southerners, among others, part of the mindset, and having grown up there, you know, I feel like I can speak about it a little bit. And, you know, hell, I still live in the South for all intents and purposes. We're trusting people, and we will put up with a lot. And we will put up with even more if you tell us it's what we have to do to be patriotic. But if we find out you have lied to us, then all bets are off, and the attitude changes rather dramatically. And I think maybe that's a little bit of what you were seeing.
Hmm.
Even the good old boys aren't willing to play anymore. You know, when I was last time I was in Alabama, you couldn't find a Bush sticker on a car. I mean, at one point I was down there for 6 days before I saw the first Bush sticker on an automobile.
Wow.
And you know, again, that is a sign. That's an indication things are changing. The thing that we have to do if we hope to lead in this change, Mike, is provide some level of direction. I don't mean marching orders. I don't mean, you know, telling the ditto heads what to do, because as progressives, liberals, whatever you want to call us, we're not wired up that way. But people want to know that they can take some action, that they can do something and begin to make positive change. Because it's that feeling of powerlessness that really is most destructive to all of us.
Yeah, and I think there is some hope when you see people like the former Treasury Secretary under Reagan and the FBI Director coming out today, Mueller, you know, nailing Gonzalez and so on, and you see all these pretty much right-wing people coming out and saying, look, the Constitution is in mortal danger, and if you don't impeach Bush and Cheney, then you're going to lose it. And these are people from the right saying that now.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go on, because
okay.
I love your show. I love your listeners. I love what you're doing, Bob. And you know, even when I don't call in, I always check in to see what you're talking about.
You know, Mike, I love. I know you got to go, but I love how the energies work, because I promise you, I'm not kidding. I was thinking of you in the last 24 hours.
That's crazy.
It is, isn't it? And it's kind of cool too. You take care. Be well.
Anyway, give a squeeze to Agnes for me. She's great.
I sure will. Bye now, Mike.
Bye bye.
And rolling on, two calls from Japan in one night. Lonnie's calling. Hey, Lonnie, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
I can't. I don't have a good feed on you. You're kind of low. So if I seem like I can't hear what you're saying, that's because I can't.
I hate that.
Was that our friend from the other? Kyushu Island?
He's from Kitakyushu, Robert is.
Ah, he's on the other side there. I'm over Tokyo side. Hey, what's his name, Michael?
Robert.
Robert?
Yes.
Okay, another Robert. Okay. Well, I'm kind of hurt, Bob, because you weren't thinking of me the last 24 hours.
How do you know that?
I'm making an educated guess.
No, you would be surprised. That's one of the lovely, lovely things about what we get to do here, Lonnie, is it's like we've created, it's, you know, Gertrude Stein said that friends are the family you make for yourself. And we have created community, and we've created family, and when we don't hear from people, we worry about them.
Sorry. You know what? I tell you the truth. My line of work is a little different, so I get up a little later, and I'm only on my first pot of coffee when you guys are on. So I'm still booting up, and my brain and mouth are not connected very well.
I understand completely.
But Bob was talking about you had mentioned the Koreans kidnapped, and I was in a izakaya last night. Izakaya is like the local neighborhood eatery bar.
Okay.
And the topic came up, and I was party to a long conversation with the patrons there in the place about how silly it was that those folks were down there. Apparently, they're missionaries.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we're going to convert people in that situation, I guess.
Well, you hit it right on the head, because in the middle of all this sectarian violence, where the Sunnis are killing the Shia are killing the Sunnis, the Kurds are waiting for a chance to kill everybody, and everybody wants to kill us, and in the middle of all that, everybody within all those different sects does agree on the portion of the Quran that says converting away from Islam is death.
Absolutely.
We're sending Korean Christian missionaries into that stew.
Lovely.
Who had the brain turned off that day that idea came up?
I don't know. I'd like to know who the sponsor was. I saw the group leader last night on the news. It was pretty good coverage of it, actually, last night on the news. Bob probably doesn't, like me, probably doesn't watch a lot of Japanese television, because a lot of it's pretty silly. But news is just I would say about 15-20% better than it hasn't completely sold out quite like U.S. mainstream media. But they did cover it, and I was watching last night, and there was quite a lively conversation in the bar. And I know beers are expensive, Bob, but hey, switch over to shochu, mix it with a little udon tea, and you get your buzz cheaper.
this sounds like the voice of experience speaking.
Oh yeah, yeah. Going on 23 years over here now.
Wow.
Yeah.
If I may ask, what is it that you do there?
I'm a voice narrator, actually.
Oh wow.
I do commercials and a lot of the silly things you might see if you go to these seminars that they hold in the electronics shows or something like that,
mm-hmm.
in Las Vegas, and those big ones. I'm probably doing one of the voices of somebody, either Hitachi or one of the makers.
That's fascinating.
I do lots of that. I also sell lenses and binoculars and stuff like that online for a friend. I handle all his English stuff. Newsletters, copywriting. Sing commercials.
And you've been able to keep yourself in fairly good stead for 23 years. Congratulations to you, man.
Well, yeah, I left. You know, I left the USA during a treacle down.
Oh, good word.
And they called it trickle, but it was actually treacle.
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean.
I left in 83. I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I tell you, if this latest presidential directive goes through after a false flag attack, I might just apply for citizenship over here.
You might want to talk to Robert about that. I remember we had a conversation a couple of months back where he was talking about someone who did that, went for Japanese citizenship, and his life changed dramatically for the worse.
Why?
Financially. I think he was one of Robert's colleagues there at the university. He got his salary cut once he became a Japanese citizen, if I recall this correctly.
Well, you see, it's not something that I would advertise.
Right. But they have apparently they have ways of finding out.
It's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And in fact, I don't mention that I've been here very long, and I don't speak Japanese when I go out for various jobs, because if I'm a local, then I'm going to get local rates.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means I have to live at home with my mom and dad.
Oh, yeah, and that will not do.
No, I'm a bit old for that.
I love getting the perspective that that you bring and that Robert brings, and you know, I see you in the chat room from time to time. I think it's so important for Americans that are, you know, here in country to hear from expatriate Americans, because the perspective is so dramatically different. America,
well, the information we get is different.
Yeah, but America, America viewed at arm's length is not the same as the America that's in your face.
No, and it's you come to some harsh realizations little by little as you're away. And when you go back, you know, for visits, you see changes that are not very happy, actually. I've noticed the conditions of the roads. I've noticed the attitudes of the people. There's just less of a feeling of community recently. And I hope that turns around, and I hope we get it back, because that used to be what made us so special.
Well, I agree.
How we wanted to do the right thing.
Well, it's in a way it's the difference. In a way, Lonnie, it's the difference between having a house with a front porch on it and a house with a back porch and a fence. You know, America used to be a front porch country. Now we're a back deck and a privacy fence.
Absolutely. Yes, armed guards and gated communities.
Precisely. Now, you left in the mid-80s.
Early 80s.
Okay, so... when you do come back, you are seeing a profound level of change in this country.
Absolutely.
I can't help but think that is a premeditated change that was wanted by certain quarters in this nation, because, you know, I mean, we know, whether you observed it at a distance or saw it close up, the Republicans and the Karl Rove machine thrive on division. On divide and conquer, split up America, red states versus blue states, gun owners versus non-gun owners, create division, and that, I mean, that's the only way they were able to take power.
Well, you see, the people in positions of power right now are in fact those same people who started this push 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
The night after Barry Goldwater lost to Lyndon Johnson is when this all started.
They're the same folks.
And they've passed it from generation to generation. You know, some people think I'm kidding when I say that Social Security, for instance, passed the Congress of the United States without a single Republican vote, and they've been told their sons, their grandsons, their great-grandsons that someday they will correct that communist nightmare. And they have long memories, and they don't give up.
No, they don't give up, and they're obviously, we can see from the results over the years, over the decades now, we can see that the planning is long term, and when they got Bush selected in 2000, they said, "Okay, that's it. We are now in charge, and the will of the people be damned."
Precisely.
And that's where we're going with this.
Yeah. And so, you know, Mike, right before your call. Mike referenced that he sees a little bit of a coming together. He sees a little bit of hope, and I for the sake of my kids, for the sake of grandkids, I pray that's correct.
Right.
Yeah, I do too.
I pray he's right. My last visit was not very pleasant, and in fact, I have to say, you know, I hang out with a bunch of retired military people and stuff in Sacramento, where I hail from now, and I meet with them, you know, hang up Elks clubs and this kind of thing. I do that stuff. Sorry, I'm an old guy. And,
that's okay.
I tell you, you cannot bring up the topic of what's going on. You can't bring it up
because it destroys.
It'll escort you out the door.
Yeah,
probably because there's such a division in thinking. There's such a division that people don't want to breach the topic.
Because they know what will happen the instant that they do.
This is a
country that cannot brook dissent anymore, it would seem. You know, I forget exactly where it happened, but there's a story out there for the last two or three days, Lonnie, about a guy who for years has sold buttons at a farmer's market here in the U.S. somewhere, and it says impeach him. He was escorted off the property a few days ago.
Oh, man.
Because of those buttons. There are people being prosecuted for their art. They do T-shirts that have the names of all the fallen from the Iraq War. Five states have passed laws in this country now, Lonnie, that say you cannot use the names of the people who have been killed in Iraq in any sort of art.
Oh.
Breathtaking,
well,
isn't it?
You know, it's like okay, where was the outrage? You see, they get away with one outrage, and it's little by little, because where was the outrage when there was free speech zones outside of national conventions for political parties? I mean, what the hell is that? Free speech zone? Zone this, mother.
Yeah, well, exactly, because, you look back to the Supreme Court case that came down a month or so ago, you know, the Bong Hits for Jesus case, you may have seen it. That was a chilling and a quelling of a very profound free speech issue. And I have no confidence that it used to be that I'd look at a story like the guy being run out for impeach him buttons, or somebody being prosecuted for printing the names of the fallen, and say, well, you know, that's a no-brainer. There's not a court in this country that wouldn't look at it and say, well, that law's got to go down. It's unconstitutional. It's repugnant to the First Amendment. It's got to go. After the Bong Hits for Jesus case, I can't say that anymore, Lonnie.
They take it away from you first. They take it away from you first, and you have to use your bucks in a court of law to prosecute the case.
Right. On a case that should be a no-brainer, but thanks to the weirdo conservatives we have. Yeah.
I know, it's insane.
It is. It's insane, and it's terrifying. Because I don't know what they're going to tell my kids they can't say.
Well, I know. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, and if you don't stop them once and for all, they'll keep going. This crowd,
well,
these authoritarians.
We have a penchant for redirecting or correcting bad decisions that we make. We have in the past, but sometimes it takes a little while, and the body, the movements of the people and the will of the people, it just takes a little while to catch momentum, and sometimes we overreact. But it usually gets corrected, and then we have to hope that that it will get corrected here as well.
Yep, I do too.
It's hard to say. Speaking, I wanted to call earlier to mention, did anyone see this delay speaking to the College Republican Convention?
As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we will have not Max Blumenthal, but his cameraman on the program next week talking about this.
Oh, excellent. This is so bizarre. This curls your hair, Bob. This is out there. And Lieberman was there as well.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, I mean, that doesn't surprise me, because this is the Hagee organization, Lonnie. And
I'll give you one quote.
Yeah.
Delay. We have to be connected to Israel to enjoy the second coming.
And there you have it. I've only been hollering about this for, you know, 4 years now. And I remember when the right wingers would say, "Oh, it's not like that, Bob. You know, no, you got it all wrong." No, I had it all right, and I still do. And these, I look forward to the conversation next week. I think we've got it scheduled for Wednesday. The gentleman's name is Thomas, and we'll have him on the program to talk about the shooting of this video. But the things that they went through, they were followed around by a PR flack who said, "Now you can't ask them about Armageddon."
Oh, well, okay. That's what the whole thing's about. You can't ask them about it.
Yeah, manufactured
Armageddon.
Well,
the next time DeLay or Lieberman is on the mainstream media, the next time on mainstream media is pontificating about all matters national, foreign, and domestic. This will never come up.
No.
This appearance and what they have to say, and which will show you what their real thinking is, will never come up. It'll never be the topic. Will never be approached. It's just amazing.
The media have to be driven to their positions and their policies. Like I said, it's just like the macaca thing with George Allen. That had to be driven through the media's forehead in
right.
order to get it covered. Because they don't like to cover this kind of stuff, Lonnie.
Well, and if they have their way with restricting the internet like they're planning on doing, it looks like it's going to come through because, you know, not enough people are aware and alert to it or complaining, contacting their representatives. We may have this source slowed down quite a bit. Because power of the blogs and the internet and independent news is actually forcing some of the mainstream media to take up at least some of these things.
It is, and you can find the proof of some of that in, for instance, Bill O'Reilly's response to Yearly Coast. He raised a big ruckus about it, and then
JetBlue Airlines, yeah.
Yeah, they bailed out of their sponsorship agreement. All because Bill O'Reilly told a bunch of lies.
Well, I was speaking with Koz there on your Cossack there on your blog, and you know he pointed out that they're just bullies, and so what we have to do what did he say? We have to treat them like we did the ones at school.
Yeah, they won't quit taking the milk money until you punch them in the face.
Up against the fence and punch them in the nose.
That's exactly what it is.
The loudest. They're just bullies. They just scream the loudest.
And that's what Keith Olbermann does, and that's what we do, and Mike Malloy, and the little band of liberal and progressive talkers out there. We're trying to punch back.
Well, the thing is, we have to become like them to defeat them, and not many of us are willing to do that because it's an ugly place to be, to live every day.
Well, like them to a certain extent, Lonnie, but not like them to the extent that we deal in facts. Most liberal talkers, progressive talkers, whatever you want to call us, we deal in facts as opposed to a Bortz or a Limbaugh or a Hannity who has to get on, and that's why I guess that's why they have to be paid millions and millions of dollars, Lonnie, because you would have to, I don't know if there's enough money to pay me to get on the air and just lie my ass off every night.
Well, yeah, or just think of your pharmacy bill for sleeping pills at night. How do you sleep?
Yeah, I mean, it's
being such a troll.
Ugh, exactly.
Anyway.
Well, Lonnie, it's awful good talking to you, my friend.
Good talking to you.
You have a great morning, all right?
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Lonnie calling from Japan. And I really do appreciate the perspective. There's a lot of people who, well, the conversation we had with Albert to begin the evening, a lot of people have considered leaving this country. I suspect that it's going to become harder and harder and harder for people to do so. So having the input of folks who already have and yet remain passionate and committed to their nation is, I believe, vitally important. Oh, let's see. Just catch up with a couple of things before we bail out for the evening. By the way, it's my Agnes. Correct me if I'm wrong. Strictly Confidential will be a rerun this evening. Our good friend Peter Godbold has had a long, long, long day at the real job, and is unable to be behind the mic this evening. But he will be back, I assume, tomorrow evening, Friday evening. We talked a little bit, and this is a good way to wrap up, I think. We talked a little bit about how hard it has become for the middle class and many of us and the lower class. And many of us believe that these are deliberate actions because this is a managed economy. Whether you can sit there and lie to yourself till hell freezes over and believe that it's some sort of free market. It is not. It is a managed economy whose purpose is to drive the money out of the pockets of the lower and the middle class and even a significant portion of the upper class and into the pockets of the extremely, extremely filthy rich, the 28,000 or so Americans who have more than half the national wealth, if you can get your mind around that. But to give you an idea, this is an article from the Chicago Tribune yesterday. Headline, as wages fall, workers slip from middle class. And the dateline on it is Dayton, Ohio. And Dayton has been hammered like much of what is frequently referred to derogatorily, and I don't much care for the term, the Rust Belt. As if people just rusted there, like the Tin Woodsman in The Wizard of Oz just froze in place. That lets too many people off the hook, that term. Because it's not working people that cause these problems. It's the people who profit by the working people and then throw them away that cause these problems. The article references a lady named Cheryl Seaton, who's 52 years old, knew that her $30 an hour assembly line job was going to be drying up. So she goes back to college and gets a 4-year degree, hoping that she could transition out of one job and into another without too much misery. She's a mental health caseworker. God knows there's demand for the people who can do that kind of thing. But as our good friend Rick Goodner, horn psychologist, could tell you, the people who are doing this work, and it is soul-wrenching work, aren't getting paid for it. This particular lady, Cheryl Seaton, went from $30 an hour to $9.45 an hour. She makes less than her 21-year-old daughter makes as a truck dispatcher. And this story is played out time and time again throughout the middle class and throughout America. And there is a statistic in here that just leaped off the page at me. You know, we think about social outreach and social service activities, and by virtue of the control of the message that has been iron-fistedly managed for the last 6 years or so, the only people out there helping the poor are the faith-based operations. Bug spray. In Dayton, the AFL-CIO maintains a food pantry. And in 2005, they handed out 28,000, they distributed handout. Oh, Jesus, the language. In 2005, they distributed 28,000 boxes of food. In 2006, it was 10 times that. It was 250,000 boxes of food. We're almost at the end of July 2007, and this year the AFL-CIO expects to top 300,000 parcels of food this year. Christy McElfresh is Vice President and Director of AFL-CIO Community Services of Greater Dayton. She said, this isn't a union issue, it's a community issue. The gap between the haves and have-nots is huge, and there is nobody in the middle. So, yeah, okay, the Dow Jones tops 14,000. The Dow Jones is an industrial average. It is not, it's not necessarily a fair barometer of what's really happening in the market, and God knows the market's not a fair barometer of what's happening in America. The market vomited 300 points today. Who cares? A 300-point loss on the market doesn't even mean that those 28,000 people who own America even felt an itch to scratch. But in 2 years, a food pantry in Dayton has gone from 28,000 parcels to 300,000. And those are people who would not otherwise be seeking that help. You listen to this network, so you already know not to buy into the spin, not to buy into the malarkey, the BS, the bug spray, the garbage. but you're also well advised to keep a weather eye out for what's coming and to operate with your eyes wide open. Thanks for joining us this evening. We'll catch you tomorrow evening. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks to Agnes. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens here happens because of Ben Birch. And many thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this network started. While they're building the American dream, we're saving the American dream, or at least trying awfully hard. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. An explosion has occurred at the home of the first private manned rocket to reach space in California's Mojave Desert. Reports just in show two people dead and four injured in the blast that happened a little over 2 hours ago. Hazmat crews are en route, concerned that airport personnel could be exposed to hazardous materials. A top envoy from South Korea is going to Afghanistan to try to save 22 of his country's citizens. Taliban kidnappers have been holding the Christian missionaries hostage for a week. One of them was killed yesterday. In testimony this afternoon, FBI Director Robert Mueller contradicted the testimony of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez before Congress. Now Senate Democrats are calling for a perjury investigation of Gonzalez. Since adult diaper-clad astronaut Lisa Nowak's arrest for stalking two other astronauts have been cleared for launch after flight surgeons and fellow astronauts said they were so drunk they posed a flight safety risk. Others imbibed heavily prior to launch, violating the 12-hour bottle-to-the-throttle rule. A NASA press conference has been scheduled for tomorrow. Further news from NASA reveals that a computer scheduled for delivery in 2 weeks by this